Testing, 1, 2, 3, testing.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Aiken City Council work session on May 9th, 2005. And we have two items to discuss in our work session. Number one is property at Colleton and East Boundary, and the second item is a joint study committee for a connector between Whiskey and Powder House Roads. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Paul Sauerborn's here tonight. He was with us last November, and he had purchased the property right on Colleton Avenue near East Boundary. When he purchased it, he saw that the property was vacant next to that location, came to the city. We looked in all of our records. According to our records, we thought it was the state. The state says, no, they don't own it. So it's back to the city's hands again. He would like to go ahead and do some construction on that property that he owns. And if he were able to obtain our property, he could even do more at that location. City Council needs to determine what you would like to do with that property, whether you would like to sell it or not, and if so, under what conditions you might want to possibly sell it to Mr. Sauerborn or another party. So he's here tonight answering questions you may have. The last piece of property we had similar to this was on Fairfield Street that we had purchased when we got the yellow house. That one we just put up for sale. Bill, what was that, about 6 weeks ago, the one on Fairfield, and we put it as a sealed bid with the highest offer is what we accepted. But we do have someone that's very interested in this property. He's the one that brought it to us, so we thought it would be only fair to listen to Mr. Sauerborn, and if you feel like you'd like to do something, then we could work something out with him depending on what that is.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. You touched on something that I was wondering about. Do we have to advertise the property in any way, or seal bid, or just what are the legal ramifications, if any?
We have done it both ways. When people have come and made us an offer, we have sometimes accepted that offer. Again, we don't have a lot of property that we have put up for sale. But again, we have done it the other way also, where we have gone out for bids. The only thing is, if we do not put up for sale, we need to at least make sure that we're receiving the appraised or a fair market value of it, and that we could check out through the county so our taxpayers are at least protected.
Mm-hmm. And when you do it, you would do it by ordinance. The ordinance would obviously be advertised to the city the way normal ordinances are. If somebody had an interest in the property, they could come to the second reading and speak at that meeting if they wanted to.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What is the zoning of that property? Would it be, or is it currently?
I believe it's residential, but I couldn't say 100%, but on Collison, that's all there is currently there. Paul, do you know what the...
No, I don't. I know the apartments in and amongst that area.
I was going to say, if it could possibly low density, multifamily low density, but it's not commercial or light industrial.
Okay. Paul, would you like to come up and tell us your wishes for it? Appreciate it.
I'm Paul Sauerborn. I live at 1245 Audubon Drive here in Aiken. And back in November, as Roger pointed out, I presented a letter to the city council or the city to ask that they consider this piece of property that's contiguous to mine. And in researching, as Roger pointed out, the state doesn't own it. It's back to you folks. And how do you deem to move forward on it? My plan was and still is to build a small single-family residence there. And that was stated in my letter back in November. I don't have it with me. And I just thought it would be something I'd like to pursue, having lived here all my life. I know the community well. And quite frankly, that area is a marginal area at best. And I'd like to step up and try to do something positive. And I think that was also stated in my letter. So That being said, I don't know, I'm open for questions or whatever you may have of me, but I'd like to pursue getting the property.
Yeah. Did you say a single-family residence?
Single-family dwelling, right.
Yeah. Not for you necessarily, but for...
Well, it could be one of my family members.
Yeah.
But it's just one?
Yes. Well, yes, on this parcel that we're talking about, one single... Well, that's right.
Mm-hmm. You have two lots. One you own now, and then this parcel, right. You'd be building two houses?
Well, the other lot's really out of the discussion because I will build a house there.
Correct.
But I plan to build a house on this one here as well.
Yeah.
Are they right next to each other?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. It's part of the reason you wanted to, when you build a house, if somebody else came in and bought this lot, you'd be right. Somewhat concerned about what went on with it.
Well, I think that's a good point, and I appreciate that because, you know, you're trying to do the best for yourself. So if you build a home and you don't know who your neighbor is, it's it leaves you a little bit out on a limb. The other thing I will say this is I did walk the neighborhood a little bit, and I spoke with my soon-to-be neighbors that next to the property, and they were excited about the fact that something was going to go up there. The house that stood on the property I had several years ago was demolished by the city because it was a crack house. And the lady said, this will be a great plus for the neighborhood, and I can't wait for you to start. And so, I mean, I think it's a positive response, at least from the neighbors that I've met in that area.
Roger, isn't it true that, I mean, we didn't even know this was the right way? I mean, Mr. Sireborn has gone through a lot of effort on this, and he wouldn't have come to us. We wouldn't even have known what was going on, and if he builds a house on it, it's going to increase the tax base, and there's an advantage to the city, because had you not done this, we would not have had this piece of property that we would have put on our tax base. Isn't that not true?
That is all correct.
Okay. So, I mean, it's just a question of how we do it. I think the idea of getting the county to appraise it and letting whatever that number comes out to be, and if Mr. Sireborn's willing to pay that with the county appraising, and I would say that would be reasonable. If we can do that and not circumvent anything, that seems to me it would be a reasonable suggestion to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So there would be no need to post it with the for sale sign?
I don't know. That's got to be...
That was my question, too.
Earlier. I mean, you know, the city has sold numerous properties without having to put in a for sale sign in the yard. That's not a requirement. And you're not required necessarily to take the highest bid. I mean, if council wanted to, you know, if somebody came to second reading of the ordinance where we were approving the ordinance to sell the property to Mr. Sireborn, and somebody came in and said, well, I'll pay you $10,000 more. I mean, it's reasonable for council to take into consideration the fact that due to Mr. Sireborn's efforts, we didn't even know we had this property available to sell him.
If you want to pay $10,000 more, that might get my attention. I'm just teasing.
Are you going to be able to save any of those big trees when you build those houses, or are they just right in the way?
I did some preliminary walkthroughs on that property, and there's a pretty large oak tree that seems to manage to run the property line between the two properties. Now, there's some significant branches that overhang into my property right now, and I would have to get those trimmed up. My plan is not to disturb too much if I can manage not to. But the lots aren't that big, and so you have to really take a hard look. But that's the most significant piece. There are some other trees on that property that are fairly large, but they're basically in the building site.
But
there is a major tree there that wouldn't be disturbed, I don't think.
Okay.
Yes.
Some of the questions that council may want to consider, because we could bring this back to you for first reading probably the next meeting, would be, do you have any questions on what minimum size house that you'd want to have built there? Do you have any concern, whether it be a house for sale versus one for rent?
This is going to be next to it.
You know, those types of questions you may want to go ahead and have as a consideration with the sale of the property.
And the zoning.
Well,
we need to know the zone.
And again, the zoning probably, if he's willing to build a single family home, but do you have concern as to what size and to whether it be a home ownership versus rental?
This is going to be next door to you, right?
Yes.
Okay. I trust that you will protect your own interest in your own home.
not his own home.
Oh, you will not be...
I'm not sure that I'll be moving there, but I am planning to build a house there.
They will both be single-family residential.
And they'll both be single-family residential. To kind of help the city council a little bit with your thought process, the basic house sizes in that area are very dramatically different in size and shape and quality, et cetera. I mean, you've got houses, well, one house contiguous to mine is probably 680 square feet. It's lapboard siding. It's 38 years old, maybe. And then there's other homes in that area that are 1,100, 1,200 square feet that are brick veneer, et cetera. And, you know, it's just the nature of that area. I think that I was thinking in terms of a 1,200, 1,275 square foot home that would be in keeping with the area, new construction as well, and it would be something that wouldn't price me completely out of the market if I were to sell these properties.
Would you be able, to, before the final reading, to give us some general ideas? I mean, you'd have some house, some general.
Oh, I can show you.
Not talking about hard, but give us some design. You know,
sure, I can
bring it
that.
In and show it to us. But
sure.
And that would basically answer those questions.
Sure, absolutely.
Roger, I would think that would be a reasonable request, and we'd have wouldn't know what's going to be built on it, and before second reading, and just move forward. Have it appraised by the county so we can get a number.
Right. Would there be a minimum square footage size for the residents you would be willing to put into the deed as a restrictive covenant that the house, the minimum size would be at least X number of square feet?
Well, given the nature of that area, and I know it's not right on this fresh in your mind, but I've marched it pretty well and ridden around it.
Right.
I wouldn't say it would be unreasonable to say, you know, 1175 or 1200 square feet as a minimum wouldn't work. I know there's some 1150 square foot homes in there too.
And council could impose that kind of a restriction and put it in the deed that he'd have. Either Paul would have to build that house, or if Paul were to sell the property to somebody else, whoever bought that property from Paul would have to build that size house.
Right. I don't have. I mean, you know,
okay.
You're going to know pretty much second reading what size house you're going to build in.
I would know that.
Let's proceed then with an appraisal and go to first reading.
Okay. And just for council's information, a 1,200 square foot house in that area, market value would be somewhere over $90,000.
Okay. Anything else?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Paul. And thank you for bringing it to our attention, so we'd even know about it. Roger, you want to go to the second item?
Yes, the second item that we have is you have a letter from Aiken County, Clay Killian. They passed a resolution at one of their meetings recently asking that the city consider a joint city-county committee specifically for the connector road between Whiskey and Powerhouse. But we would like to see that if we're going to do this, that we'd have some kind of a standing committee, that any issues dealing with roads, we'd have at least a couple of council members, maybe three council members, that could be meeting with the county on a regular basis, probably a minimum a couple times a year, could be three, four, five times, depending on what the issues would be out there. But in particular, it's about this new roadway that's being proposed. But there are several other issues out there that affect both the city and the county, as we've discussed on many occasions. From Pine Log Road South, Whiskey Road is in the county, but it's getting very little jurisdictional enforcement from the state or the county. None of it's in the city, and that's one issue, is what do we do with Whiskey Road long term? Then we have this connector. We're going to be talking in the near future about building a connector from extension of Pawnee down to Doherty. We talked about Fabian going east-west. We have another connector between the one going between Whiskey and Powerhouse that would parallel Whiskey Road going north and south. So there's a number of roads that we're talking about, and having a standing committee would be a something that I think council may want to consider. Again, this committee would look at this road, but they could also look at other road issues. And possibly, if council wanted to, there might be other issues that may come up in the near future on top of this. As you know, our staff had met with county staff for a year and a half on a overlay district for Whiskey Road. That's gone back to county for the last year and a half. Nothing's been done on it. And maybe by having this committee, we could get that and other issues moving forward a little bit quicker. So that's the issue before tonight, to recommend having this joint committee. I know that Gary Bunker, the council member from that area, is here present tonight, and there's two members, I believe, from the Arts Committee that are here also.
Roger, my only concern with that is that some of these roads, as you've mentioned, are going to be in different areas, different districts for both city council members and also county council members and also citizens. So my thought is to not necessarily have a standing committee, because I think the council members perhaps that live in those districts are going to want to serve on those committees. Now, maybe part of it could be standing or fixed, but it seems to me that it needs some flexibility so that you could put in council members, or council members could be a part of it that live in that particular district.
I see.
Now that's my thought.
To me,
and you want some citizens that live in that.
I think where all this came from, obviously, is we had that full committee that we studied the daylights from Silver Bluff to Whiskey Road, and that's the committee we're going to have. I'm going to volunteer not to be on it, and have the other three councilmen that weren't on that one be on it, because it took about how many meetings we go to on that. Dick and Jane were on it with me, and we went, I don't know how many times it was, but it seems to me the biggest thing is we need to keep the county council members informed what was going on. The mistake that was made in that first deal was we presented this road and said this is where we want it to go. If we would have brought the county council into it and said, listen, this is where our consultant, would you please come in early in the process and get the county council's input in it very early in the process, I think that would solve it to me. In other words, I don't have a problem setting up this ad hoc committee, but everybody's got to understand it takes the committee we were on. We studied it to the nth degree about every aspect of these things, and I'm just not sure we need to do that on this one. But I think we need to keep the county council members informed about what's going on. Frankly, if we're going to have an ad hoc committee, we need to have an ad hoc committee about Daugherty Road. Daugherty Road is entirely in the county, if I'm not mistaken, is it not, Roger? And that's a road that we need a tremendous amount of work on. There's other roads that we probably need to be studying too. So I think this, how we go about this is something I'm not sure that it wouldn't be just as easy to do, get started, but keep the county council members informed that they can be involved in the process, and if it affects anybody in their district, they can bring them in and get all the input they want.
Well, Pat, I think you made the point here by saying and looking at all the time it took on the committee and all the time that was spent on from Silver Bluff to Whiskey. If we had one standing committee with the same people on it, they would wear themselves out after a while. So what we're talking about here is, I think, the philosophy. Do we want a standing committee, Roger? I think that's what you were throwing out on the table. One committee that would look at all the roads. Or do we want committees made up of the areas in which we're talking about, bringing in those council members and those three citizens or so from that particular area? It's like putting you maybe, Pat, on a committee for the north side up there.
Well, I'd like to get Gary's comments about how he thinks we could work it.
Sure, Gary.
Certainly. And each one is different, too. Like the southern connector that we dealt with earlier, that's entirely in the county and will always be in the county. I don't see it ever being in the city. It's not in our water and sewer district. This one here will be in the city probably entirely within the next few years and is in our water and sewer district. So each one you look at is going to be a little different as to how you want to treat it.
And now none of them are in the city.
part of this new road will be in the city, but the majority is outside the city, at least today, even though all the property owners have come to us talking about projects.
Gary. Oh, thank you very much. It certainly wasn't my intention to come up here and speak tonight, but I am very excited that I'm hearing some support for at least the ad hoc proposal, because that's what we were really going for to begin with. Though I'm even more excited, though, to hear some interest and discussion about how to do something a little more permanent. I really think something that would focus on the roads and maybe other infrastructure issues would be very appropriate. I know there's some debate I've heard back and forth between, do we have a fixed membership versus perhaps a rotating membership, and my thinking is that's something that could be worked out, and perhaps that could be in the charter of the ad hoc committee also, to look at not only this proposed connector road between Powder House and Whiskey, but also to come up with a proposal for something that's more, a little more permanent.
Gary, is it your feeling part of where this is coming from is make sure everybody's on the same page to start with? In other words, we don't go off on a tangent that doesn't make any sense or whatever, and we all know preliminarily. Of course, when you bring consultants in, what they're trying to do is figure out the best way for it to work. Not that it's set in stone, because obviously it wasn't in the other road, and none of this thing's going to be set in stone until the people that say this is where we're going to spend the money, which would basically be the city and the county and the state. So I don't really have a problem, Mr. Mayor, with a committee that would keep the county and the city working together on these issues, so we don't get at loggerheads about how we do fund it. Because if there isn't support from the city and the county, we're not going to be able to get the funding to get the roads built anyway. So I guess what I'm saying is, having an ad hoc committee for one particular part of the city would probably work, but I don't know whether they work in all parts. I mean, you know, when you go all over, I think it'd be a lot of work.
Well, that's what I'm saying too.
Well, at the very least, that we're looking for is a resolution from the city that would match the resolution that the county came up with, and I think there's plenty of opportunity to discuss further how we could extend this one way or the other into something a little more permanent. So actually, I'm very excited by what I'm hearing here tonight.
Well, Gary, how about outlining real quickly for us what the county is saying they'd like to see? I'm reading it here, I think,
right.
but you tell us in your words, if you would.
Well, essentially what we're looking for is something that's very similar to the ad hoc committee that was created for the Silver Bluff Whiskey Road connector. Because I think I was not on county council when that was in operation, but just as a citizen following in the paper and talking to people, my impression was that it worked out very well. It gave some good input from the different folks there, and it gave pretty much the best road that we can get out of that. I think we could do the same thing with this Whiskey Road, Powder House Road. So near term, this is what we're looking for, is something very similar to that first committee. Long term, the question is, do we want to do something that's a little more broader scoped, which I think would be a great idea.
And this is specific, though, for this particular area, right, talking
yes,
about?
Yes, the resolution that was passed by county was specific.
Right, okay.
In other words, if we were to do something broader scoped, if the city proposed something that had a broader scope, then county would have to come back and agree on that also.
Okay.
This may also give us an opportunity. It does cost money to do these studies. And right now the city's paying for the studies, the 20% share. And maybe we could even pass our resolution that the county would help pay for some of the studies.
Oh, yeah.
Or perhaps utilize county staff to assist
sure.
with that, too. So.
Sure.
That, too. That'd be great.
Right. Well, I think it's a perfectly good idea. We ought to do it. We ought to make sure that since it's in the county, it's in the city, we ought to make sure we all agree on what we want to do. And it really helps sell the whole thing, too, once we do agree. Mm-hmm. That goes a long way to the public to say, hey, the county, the city, working together with citizens on the committee, and they've worked this thing out. And
what I think was exciting, too, was that the county council voted unanimously for this, which I think means that they're really extending goodwill. And if we can do a good job with this, then, for instance, the overlay district that you're bringing up, Roger, hopefully that could be something that we could work on also. There's lots of different opportunities for city and county to cooperate, particularly as the city's expanding. And so there's a lot of interest in the county side to make sure that things go smoothly.
It's very important that city council, if you're going to do this, we do it right away. The consultants are ready to present their proposed location for this road, probably within the next 10 days, Ed. And then there was going to be a public meeting by the end of the month where they'd have displays downstairs to show the public and have them get input on that direction. So, again, if we're going to do this, we need to move it along and get something done.
If we're that quick, we got to do something.
Yeah, I would really agree. We go ahead and take care of this first issue. We'll work out the modalities. I think the idea of cooperating in all the future things, and I do agree that it does perhaps need a broader membership than what we're talking about right now. So to move ahead with this is absolutely the right thing to do.
Here, you think we could, instead of just having it, seeing how we're moving pretty quickly on this thing, I mean, as far as having the consultant, I didn't realize it was that quick to get it done, that we could, in good faith, get with the county. You appoint three members, and we appoint at least to get started with the county would have their three members appointed. We would have our three members appointed, and then work it out from the standpoint of where the three members of the citizens would come from. So we could at least, if we're that quick with it, we need to move on this thing pretty quickly. If you're going to talk about 10 days, I mean, it's going to be hard to figure out which three citizens are going to be involved.
They're going to present it to the two staffs. That's the way they've been working, and some of the landowners in the area. There's three primary landowners that own that property between Whiskey and Potter House.
So maybe they're the three citizens right there.
We'll have to work that out with the county, and the city reps will have to
that's right.
determine that. So I can't speak for the full council here, but I can certainly represent what we discussed and what we passed at the meeting a couple weeks ago.
There's some real advantages here, too, though.
You can have this agenda if you like.
Man, the real advantage here is that 70% of Whiskey Road's in the county. Maybe everybody would start showing up at the county council and complain about traffic on Whiskey Road rather than coming in here to complain.
Right. Why don't we, as Roger suggests here, why don't we add this to the agenda this evening under new business?
Be a great idea.
And pass this resolution, a resolution saying that we want to do this. Okay. That would be item four under new business.
Tell me again, Mr. Mayor, what we're passing, what we're voting on tonight.
Well, as I see it, what we would be asking for is to consider a resolution to establish, same as the county has done, or to agree to establish the same as suggested by the county. If we want to say it like that, where we'd have three county council members. Yeah, we're just going to verbally say it tonight because this is something we've got to act on fast.
And we would want to select our members tonight if possible, too.
Yeah.
Select the members that would be on that committee, the three city council members.
Yeah, be thinking about who wants to volunteer.
I'm happy to volunteer. Having had experience,
I'll volunteer, even though I would defer to one other councilman who wants to be on it. Wouldn't bother me a bit.
Be creative.
You said something about wanting to do it.
You want
to establish?
Do you want to be on it?
I'd like to volunteer.
Don, you want to be on? The other three of us were on the other one.
I don't have any. Harry over there, but like the mayor referred to. Beverly said she thought she had some in that district.
Beverly has some at the northern end.
Mm-hmm. That's why she said she might have.
You ready to take a break?
Okay, are we ready? I think we understand what we want to say when we get there. Yeah, let's take a. You want to take a break?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't realize it was 7 o'clock already. Okay. We are adjourned then from our. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting of May 9th, 2005. We're happy to have you here with us. If you would please stand with us for our prayer and our Pledge of Allegiance. Dear Lord, we acknowledge that you are the giver of all good and perfect gifts, and we humbly come before you praising your name and thanking you for this day, our community, and those gathered here this evening. We thank you for the opportunity to come together to discuss issues facing our city. We ask for wisdom for the decisions we will make. We know that we can't always please everyone, but we do pray that our decisions will be in the best interest of our citizens and in some way improve the quality of life for all. For these things and the many other blessings you've given us throughout the year, we give you the praise and the glory. In your name we pray. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions and deletions or deletions to the agenda? Excuse me.
Yes, I think we want to add to the agenda this question.
Yes, right. The consideration of the resolution to establish a study committee for the interconnector between Whiskey Road and Powder House.
Sorry.
And also, Roger has an announcement to make, so I guess we ought to officially add that to the agenda so he can make that announcement if he wants to. Okay. Anything else? If not, do we have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any questions? Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. Roger, you want to make your announcement first?
That you're asking me to do that in case I forget by the end of the meeting?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
The announcement is that Council did an excellent job at Horizons in selecting the Municipal Cup winner for the City of Aiken in the state. And we won again this year. Larry Morris presented on our educational program within Public Works and Parks and Recreation, and we're really excited about that. Really nice job when working with Aiken Technical College. I definitely want to give them credit. Nika Loving with Larry's staff has headed that up, and just a tremendous job. And thank you, Larry, and thank your staff and everybody else for winning.
We do appreciate it. Everything you've done, your staff, Larry. Thank you. Okay, next item, minutes. Consideration of the minutes of the work session of April 19th and 21st, 2005, and the regular meeting and work session of April 25th, 2005. Any changes necessary, or do we have a motion?
Mayor, I move we approve the minutes.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Under old business, we have appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, we have two appointments tonight. One appointment is by Councilwoman Clyburn to appoint Stephen Anaclario, who would replace Rosalie Johnson. That term would expire in 2006. And then Councilwoman Clyburn would also like to make the recommendation on the reappointment of Mary Barnett to the Park Commission. And that would expire on December 1st, 2006.
Okay. Do we have a motion on these?
Mr. Mayor, I move for adoption of these appointees to the respective committees.
Second.
Okay, second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay.
I'm going to abstain on Anaclario because he's my nephew, but I don't know what I need
okay.
to.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor,
is that the real reason? Just kidding, Mike. kidding. Yes, Don.
Mr. Mayor, can I make a nomination, please?
Yes, sir.
For next meeting, I'd like to replace Gail Smiley, who's been on the Environmental Committee. Her husband got transferred to Oak Ridge, Tennessee, with SRS. And Marcia Rogers would like to be in consideration, take her place. I'll be turning this in, Miss Sarah.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor,
Yes.
I'd like to reappoint James R. Finley to the Board of Adjustments and Appeals.
Okay. Any others?
Yes. I would like to reappoint Martin Buckley to the Board of Adjustments and Appeals. I'm not sure if I said that the last meeting or not. I apologize if I did. And I'd like to, I have here, Sarah got out of the records the application from Robert Stack. Is he here yet tonight? No, I don't see him. And I would like to nominate him to the Housing Authority. He's been very active in the Schofield Neighborhood Association and, as you can see, applied in November of 2003. Mm-hmm. So has been interested.
He just walked in. Your timing is good.
I would like to nominate Robert Stack to the Housing Authority since I've fetched your old application.
I have one too, Tom Abbott. It's attached here for the Arts Commission. Now, let me explain one thing. You see that little no there on there? That's my handwriting. I'm going to get that confirmed with Tom. I don't think there's any conflict of interest, but I did want to make that point. I will get that affirmed with him by the next meeting. Confirmed, I guess. Okay. Anything else? That's it for appointments. Item 2 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to revise the Kroger concept plan. Mr. LeDuc, please.
I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the concept plan for the property located at 1795 Whiskey Road and owned by Kroger Food Stores. We had a long discussion this last time, and maybe I could explain this a little bit better so we don't have to have quite the length of discussion. A standalone gas station could have two signs. They could have a freestanding sign, and then they could have a sign on the canopy itself. They could have a sign on either side of the canopy. Kroger's, when they originally came to the city, showed a standing sign that would display their gas prices. Because of the fact that you could see it from one direction real well, but the opposite direction you cannot see it as well, they would like to put an electronic sign on their canopy on the east side of the canopy. Not on both sides, but only on the east side. This would equalize them to almost what you would see at a standalone gas station, except, again, in a standalone gas station, they could have it actually on both sides of the canopy. So they're not asking for anything more than any other gas station would have. It's just a change from the concept plan that you originally saw and when it was planned commercial. So they are here tonight asking that you would go ahead and allow them to have a second sign to be placed on the canopy at the fuel center on Pine Log Road frontage. And again, this would revise the plan that they originally had submitted. And this is the second reading and public hearing.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir. This is second reading and public hearing, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so.
My name is Jan Smith. I live at 193 Dogwood Road. I believe the Planning Commission has already turned down this proposal. And I'd just like to state for the record that I don't see where it's in the health, safety, and welfare and best interest of the citizens of Aiken. We don't need another sign. They already have one there. I believe it's in the best interest of Kroger. So I'd like to see it turned down again.
Okay, thank you, Janice. Anyone else like to speak on the issue? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve this ordinance as read.
Okay.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, the reason why I'm going to vote against it is because it wasn't approved. Also, I went rode around and there aren't everybody else either has one or the other. They put their signs up, Shell or whatever, and they have one price deal. So, and we trimmed the, I know the bushes. And I looked at it couple times this weekend, and if that one bush is trimmed every so often, you can see it. And I guarantee one thing, they didn't have any problem that first day they opened, because I couldn't get in there to get gas, so they didn't have any problem letting me know of the 199, because it was, as long as they're a penny or 200. My only problem is the rest of the gas stations do not have it on their canopies. They got their name, and they got one. They've got one price deal, and I think you can see what's there. So I just don't. I'm not going to vote for it because it wasn't approved the first time. But and I understand why you're asking for it, but I just don't think it's necessary.
Okay. All right. Now we said earlier, Roger, you said earlier that this is not unlike other gas stations that could ask for a second sign.
Again, they could put their name up there on the canopy. They could put the price in the canopy, but it's allowed to have two sign faces.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Of any size? I mean, it can cover the whole canopy?
The size of the canopy, there is a size restriction. Ed, do you recall what that is?
20% on the front part of the canopy, 25% on the side. I guess it's 20% on the back. 20% on the front, 25% on the area.
So if the side area was 6 feet high and 100 feet long, or 600 feet, they could have 120 square feet? 20% of 600? Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to support it. I see nothing wrong with having two signs. We allow two signs. We allow people to ask for them. And I see no problem with having a second sign here in this case. Any other discussion?
Yeah, I do think the Planning Commission, though, deals with signage a lot. And when I see that they rejected the 6-1, I feel like they probably have a more consistent idea of what the regulations have been than even we do, because they deal with it. And I think I agree with Pat. There's enough. They're going to get in there. There's enough. There are enough signs.
Okay, any other discussion?
I don't think an 18-inch letter 18 feet above the ground is going to be too unattractive compared to some of the other signs around town. So.
Okay, if there are no other questions, let's vote. And all in favor of approving the sign? Show of hands. Opposed? Okay, passes 4-3. Okay. Item 3 is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 100 Marvin Drive. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 0.25 acres of land owned by Richard Turner and located 100 Marvin Drive, and to zone the same residential single family. This is one of four annexations you have before you tonight. They're all very similar in that they would like to have some type of city service. In this case, they were looking to connect to our city sewer service, which is very similar to what other properties have done over there in the last couple of years. It would be an RS-10 zoning based on the size of the lot. The Planning Commission did unanimously approve this. And for Council's consideration, this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to annex property 100 Marvin Drive to be zoned RS-10.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading of this ordinance, and if there's anyone who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move for approval of this annexation on 100 Marvin Drive.
Second.
Okay, second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 4 is the second reading public hearing on ordinance to annex 124 Vivian Drive. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the city limits of Aiken, certain property consisting of 0.55 acres of land, more or less, owned by Donald and Jean Orth, and located at 124 Vivian Drive, and is owned the same residential single family. As the request you just recently had, they are also interested in sanitary sewer and other city services. The Planning Commission did vote unanimously to approve this annexation. This is the second reading public hearing consideration of an ordinance to annex property at 124 Vivian Drive.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone like to speak on this issue, you may certainly do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve this ordinance.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 5 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex property at 1351 Hampton Avenue Northwest. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken. Certain property consisting of 0.45 acres of land, more or less, owned by Jimmy J. and Thelma Long and located at 1351 Hampton Avenue, and to zone the same residential single-family RS-10. They, too, would like to connect to our sanitary sewer. Their property would meet the RS-10 regulations. They're interested also in having the other city services. This was approved unanimously by the Planning Commission and is the second reading of public hearing consideration of an ordinance to annex property at 1351 Hampton Avenue Northwest as RS-10.
Okay, thank you, sir. Second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Move to approve this on second reading.
Second.
Okay. All right, we have second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, it passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Long is out there. He didn't want to speak, but he's quite happy to be coming into the city.
Okay.
Glad to have you.
Oh, right, okay. Well, good. We certainly are glad to have you. Item 6 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to designate Emmanuel School to the Aiken Historic Register. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, by title only, it's an ordinance designating the Emmanuel School to the Aiken Historic Register as an Aiken Historic Site with landmark status. Everybody is familiar with this property at just north of the corner of Richland and York Street. They're asking for landmark status to be accepted as a historic site. You have to show that they have significant characteristics and components that need to be protected and preserved, which absolutely this site is one of those. The Planning Commission and Historic Preservation Commission both were very enthusiastic about the recommendation as the landmark status for the structure at 120 York Street, known as Emmanuel School. This is the second reading and public hearing consideration of an ordinance to designate the Emmanuel School at 120 York Street Northeast to the Aiken Historic Register.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move for approval of this designation, that the school be placed on the Aiken Historic Register.
Okay.
Second.
We have a second? Okay.
Yep.
Dick, any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. That's great. Item 7, second reading, public hearing of ordinance to convey lots to Aiken Corporation. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance approving the conveyance of city-owned property consisting of 10 lots in the Tool Hill area to Aiken Corporation. As you are probably aware of, the Aiken Corporation submitted and received a grant application through the South Carolina State Housing Finance and Development Authority that allows them, as they build homes, to discount the price by up to $20,000 per home. To get them started, we are designating 10 lots for them to build on. Our intent is to have a groundbreaking ceremony out at Tool Hill, which you'll get more information on in the near future, on June 4th at 2 o'clock. I've met with the residents out there just this last week. The president of the Homeowners Association are just as excited as can be as to what's happening. The sidewalks are almost complete. The curb and gutter's in. The lights went up late last week, and we're now ready to start building the houses. One house has already been started, and they intend to start up to 6 houses in the very near future, depending on the loan status that they have with a local bank. And if need be, the city could always go back and look at helping, because we do want to make a real splash and get a number of houses start out there in that neighborhood at one time. But this allows them to get started. It allows them to build on our lots with the statute and the conveyance here. The language did get changed that says that we would get the money back at the time that the property is sold, as was stated at the last meeting. This is the second reading and public hearing of a consideration of an ordinance to convey 10 lots of Tool Hill area to Aiken Corporation.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Move for adoption of this ordinance.
Okay, got a
second,
motion.
Ma'am.
I have a second. Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. For approval. Yes, it's unanimous. Item 8, second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the business license ordinance. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance amending the City of Aiken license ordinance. We have had a lot of discussion probably over the last year to year and a half concerning our business license. We have looked at our current system, which is called the SIC, Standard Industrial Classification System. Council was interested in looking at the North American Classification Industrial System, which is a new system that was developed within the last 5 years in cooperation with Canada and Mexico as will be a fair system for the three countries and the businesses throughout those areas. By converting to the NAICS system, it'll bring us up to a level where businesses based in their IRS tax codes would fit in exactly with the categories that are related to in the NAICS system. We're currently in the system. There are several businesses because they are brand new within the technology field and computer field that are not even identified, and so we have to guess as to what we should or should not do. The council looked at the rate structure as to what we should provide and have for these. We had presented this to you, I believe it was in March, that it would be a revenue neutral. You had looked to see if we could possibly lower those rates. The rates that we had presented as a revenue neutral would lower every some businesses by 10 to 20%, and then there would be a few businesses, especially a larger retail stores similar to a Walmart, a Target, some of the larger grocery stores, large retail would go up. What we have done is we had also looked at contractors. Contractors are in a category which is called Class 8. It's lumped in with other areas that do not fit in any of these categories. According to Roy Bates, who had worked with us, they need to stay in Class 8, and I think there's a little bit of confusion when at our last meeting, would they actually move into Class 3 from Class 8 or just have the Class 3 rates? Lex Kirkland is here, and he'll explain in just a moment why they would stay in the Class 8 class, but we should be charged the rates for Class 3. By doing that and moving them up to the proper rate class, and for years it's not that they weren't in the right class, they for whatever reasons, council decided 30-some years ago to put them at the rate structure they were currently at, because we haven't changed the rates in I don't know how many decades. It's been at least 30 or more. That's as far back as we could find our records. This, again, would put them into what Roy Bates feels is the proper rate category. With the extra revenue that we'd get from them, it helps lower all of the rates so that, for instance, just bear with me for a second. I'll give you a couple examples. Currently, restaurants making about $500,000 a year are paying $453. Under the new rate structure, they'll be paying $428. So they'll see about an 8% reduction. Hotels are currently paying $1,033 based on $1 million. They'll go down to $828, so they have about an 18% reduction. Doctors, based on a gross of $1 million, are currently paying $1,807. They'll be paying $1,602, or about 11% reduction. Barbers go down a little bit. General retail, conversely, though, $15 million on general retail goes up about $1,000, or about a 11% increase. furniture stores, they go down a little bit. Auto repair goes down. Building supplies, we only have two in town. That's Home Depot and Lowe's at $10 million. They would go up around 15%. So again, you'll see some changes up or down, but it's based on the fact of the ability to pay. And so the rates now fit into what is considered the most up-to-date system within the United States. And Lex, I know there's a question on that, so if you could come up here and explain why contractors pay in Class 8 but would be paying Class 3.
Okay, I'm going to try to explain this as best I can. If you have any questions while I'm explaining it, please just ask. The way the businesses are broken out into really the seven basic categories, because the first seven categories are really the ones that you want to look at. The Class 8's kind of a catch-all of different businesses and many different rates. Commonly, we refer to the Class 8 rates as the contractor's rates, but really there's several. So really, we probably shouldn't say the Class 8 rates are 50 cents, you know, for each thousand, and $50 for the first 2,000. The way they broke out the first seven rates was to first put each business in their next category. Then, based on their ability to pay, they had all the businesses, you know, ranked in ability to pay, and then just made seven distinct categories by just basically drawing a line for each one at different marks for their ability to pay. And the contractors fall into the Class 3 when you break it up that way. The reason that the city would not move them just directly into Class 3 is because there are some additional regulations that apply to contractors that don't apply to the other businesses in that rate class. Since we have to treat all members of each class alike, council chose, and most councils have chosen, to put the contractors into Class 8 where they can deal with them individually. And the type of regulation that we're talking about is, for instance, many contractors won't have an annual license because they don't work in the city on an annual basis. They might do a job in the city, you know, every few years or whatnot. There's regulations that are set up in Class 8 specifically for contractors that allow us to charge them on a per job basis, and that's really about the only place in the ordinance that's talked about. We also have some other regulations, such as contractors are required to display contractor decals on their vehicle. That's addressed in the contractor section of Class 8. You wouldn't want them to be in Class 3 and require them of that, because if you required them to display contractor decals in Class 3, you'd have to have all the business in Class 3 would be required to display contractor decals. There are also some state requirements of contractors. As you all know, contractors are licensed by the state of South Carolina. Our ordinance requires them to have the proper state classification to have the different distinctions that a contractor would have in the city of Aiken. And that requirement's talked about in the section on contractors in Class 8. Whereas if they were in Class 3, you know, that wording wouldn't be in there. And that's really the only reason that they're taken out of the Class 3 and put into Class 8 is for those additional regulations that go along with being a contractor.
Which increases your cost, which is increases your ability to pay, right?
The ability to pay.
Somewhat?
The ability to pay is taken into account when they look at their IRS statistics, which is how they fall into Class 3. So their ability to pay shouldn't be a consideration for them being moved to Class 8.
Yeah. So the rate they're paying in Class 8 is based on the ability to pay.
Currently it is not. If you made the change...
And I mean, it will be.
It will be.
Yeah, yeah. The 110 I'm looking at here. The 40 plus the 110?
Exactly. By moving them to Class 3, you're basically correcting our ordinance, because that's where they should. That's where the rate should be.
Do we have anything in writing from this that says contractors should be in rate Class 3? Is there anything in writing that, as we were told, that they were supposed to be, they were in Class 3? In other words, I was expecting to see that they were going to be ranked right up there with manufacturing and transportation and contractors. So is there anything in this document, NAICS, that says a contractor should be a rate class 3?
It's not going to be found there, and it won't be found under NAICS because NAICS isn't breaking them up. They're broken up based on their IRS statistics showing their ability to pay, and that was done by G.C. Robinette and Roy Bates, who drafted the ordinance and who are the ones that initially told us they belong in Class 3 or a Class 3 rate, not in Class 3.
You talking about the gentleman that was up?
Yes, sir.
Worked for the city. I mean, or did work.
Our consultant.
This year that set this whole thing up.
Yeah. Cool.
Right. Yeah, they may ask.
Do the cities that we compared that you gave us at the work session or whatever, do they all charge the class 3 rate?
I do not know that answer.
One of the things that's difficult to figure out when you compare Myrtle Beach and wherever you're comparing is the volume of the building that they have. I mean, that's what, you know, your average cost. I can tell you the amount of building going on in Myrtle Beach in the city of Myrtle Beach makes a difference as far as what the average contractor would be, what his gross sales would be. So, you know, I'm just concerned about, I thought we were voting on one thing, and but what you're saying is that the rate at which we charge the contractors, it just has to be equal to a rate we pick out, not necessarily that it says it has to be in the class 3 rate because our consultant said it should be.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying based on what the information they gave me, there's no doubt they belong in class 3 because they have the same ability to pay as the other businesses found in class 3.
Well, I can tell you from what I know about what the percentage of profit is versus a manufacturer versus a builder, to me, it's a question mark here. And of course, we don't have any manufacturing in that are paying anything in the city of Aiken because of this. Nobody's going to come in. What manufacturing company do we have in the city of Aiken that's willing to pay this? They ain't going to do it. They got to stay out. They got to. Can't afford to pay, especially with what Roger mentioned earlier to me is the personal property tax they would pay. So I don't know. I'm concerned. You know, we said, let's just take the $100,000 and the builders will pay. Well, think about what we just did. We just raised the construction cost to the builders of the people who buy houses in Aiken next year by $100,000. Now, we can say you can cut through it all you want to, but that's what we did because the builders are going to just pass it along, folks. Isn't it? I mean, isn't that?
Well, Pat, what is your suggestion?
My problem is raising it from 55 cents to $1.10 and doubling it to $2.20. The houses we just approved over here, $80,000 house.
All right, that rate is the class 3 rate, right?
Yeah, but Mayor, correct. We set the rate. We set the 110, do we not?
Well, you do in increments, so if you change that, then you've got to change the others.
I tell you this.
Is that correct, Lex?
That's correct.
Okay, if you change that 15 cents, you have to change every one of them 15 cents.
Mayor, the other thing that bothers me a little bit, and I just wanted to ask this question. If you had a builder who lives in the city of Aiken, has his cars paying property taxes, has his house in the city of Aiken, can we treat him somewhat differently?
No.
Could we have a provision here for that if you're in the city of Aiken, if you live in the city of Aiken, your primary residence in the city of Aiken, that you pay the 110 versus the 210? Is that possible?
I don't know. I mean, if you're going to do that for one business, you've got to do it for all of them.
Well, the difference here is the rest of them are here. You don't have to. If you're going to sell stuff, you're here.
These definitions you've given us here, where do they come from? Are they law?
I'm not sure what you have in front of
you. Are they law? Where it says, it talks about, let's see. A trailer at the construction site, for instance, or a structure in which the contract temporarily resides is not a permanent place of business under this ordinance.
That's coming directly from the model ordinance. Thank you, Robert.
What page is that?
But is that coming from law 13?
This is coming from the model ordinance that Roy Bates developed for the Municipal Association.
Okay, but is that based on law out of the state? Probably they didn't get into that kind of detail.
I don't think so. I do not know.
Yeah.
He just gave some model ordinance that he suggested through the Municipal Association that everybody uses to match up what the legislation is currently.
Right. Well, Pat, I'm confused a little bit, too, because when Roy was with us, of course, on two occasions, he said that to be constitutional, we needed to put the contractors in Class 3. That's what I recall him saying.
That's what he said.
But now, does that mean physically you've got to put them in 3 or just charge them the same rates as you would if they were in 3?
You're hitting the nail on the head right there. Exactly what he meant would be that they would have the same rate as the businesses in Class 3. And I think you can definitely see that when you look at his model ordinance. Of course, he doesn't have rates in his ordinance, but he himself breaks the contractors out and puts them in Class 8 because they have other regulations that need to be addressed so that the city employees can enforce the ordinance the way it needs to be.
But what would be the distinction? Do we say they should be in Class 1 or Class 2? What that they would have this if they were paying the same as the
double? What you have to do is you have to go back and look and see that every business is put in the class they're in based on the IRS statistics and their ability to pay. Contractors fall into the window that makes up Class 3. That's the national IRS statistics, and that's the only answer I can give you
for
that.
Well, I would feel a lot better if this NAICS said contractors, and that's what I was expecting to see when I saw this paper. When I saw it in Class 8, that ain't what I thought I was voting on last time.
I thought Mr. Bates also said there were just a few categories that would be in Class 8, that we had to have some categories in Class 8 because of taxes that we got on a statewide basis.
That's true. In other businesses that you'll find, telecommunications, the rate set by the state legislator, so they're put in Class 8. Railroads, that's set by the state legislature, so they're put in Class 8. Insurance companies, set by the legislature, also put in Class 8. You've got all these different companies or different businesses that make up Class 8, and there's a multitude of rates for each one of them. That's why they're addressed specifically in the ordinance.
All right. What other ones are the rate what other ones exist where the rates are determined by the state? We've got rail transportation, telecommunications, insurance carriers, but this is the biggest category we've got.
What's that?
Class 8.
Class 8.
Right.
It's the biggest category we've got.
Right, and that's not set by the state at all.
What is?
It is not set by the state. They're not set by the state.
You mean who's in it is not
the
set.
Contractors are not set by the
no,
state.
No, but the rail. I understood Mr. Bates to say that the businesses that belonged in Class 8 had to be treated differently because there were regulations where we got taxes from statewide levies or something like this, and that therefore Class 8 would consist of telecommunications, cable TV, and insurance carriers. I mean, that was his cursory list, at least. And now we've got this class that's huge. And what are the rates going to be on all these different things? Are they all going to be different?
Yes, and that's how they are now.
Well, the rates, you can see what the rates are.
Well, what are they? We don't even know what they are.
Oh, they're on the paper.
Yeah. Here.
They're on 16, page 16, 17, 18.
First on page 12.
Excuse me.
Yeah, it starts on page 12.
Each individual classification in Class 8 has a different rate classification.
And that is on what page?
Starts on page
starts
12.
Starts on 12.
And I think the correct
of the ordinance. Matter of fact, contractors are the lowest of the rates, it seems like.
To be accurate, some of the major ones, like utilities, are set by the state.
Correct.
The others are, in fact, set by us.
By contract.
Like contractors, like junkers, scrap dealers, like drinking places, bars and lounges, those are all, do they also have a class where they should be, but we have them in this class because they're treated specially, or these are just arbitrary rates that we've
the amusement machines
these were not set by
Department
us.
Revenue.
I'm sorry.
The amusement machines are set by the Department of Revenue.
Right, that's
by state.
Which
state regulation? This is Class 8.
Amusement.
It says amusement machines, coin operated.
Okay, but what about drinking places, bars, lounges, and cabarets?
Well, let's see. Are they in here?
Yes.
Where are they showing? What page?
Page 15.
15, okay.
Yeah. Question.
I don't know, but you notice that rate per 1,000 is much higher.
Yes.
It's $5 as opposed to $110.
That is my question. Does it go to a rate up above or in the 1 through, or do they also belong in 1 through 7, or are those just arbitrary rates that we set?
I do not know where those numbers came from.
I'm not sure either.
Were they the rates in the SIC when we had the SIC? And you just carried those over?
I know the drinking places, I think that is the exact same. Most of these do look like they're the same.
I suspect that's what you did, Lex. I don't know what you did, but...
Well, this is coming directly from the model ordinance that he prepared, so...
But he didn't give you rates, did he, on the model?
The rates for the... For these businesses were included. The ones for the contractors were not. And the class 1%.
Okay, these were included. These rates were included.
Yeah, I didn't.
Exception of the contractors?
Right. Well, class 1 through 7 and the contractors were not addressed in the model ordinance. That's what their rate would be, but I guess these were because I didn't put these in.
Mr. Bates did this then?
Mr. Bates developed the model ordinance and the rates that some of the rates that you see in here in class 8 were here when he did it.
They were in the previous class 8.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Under the SIC.
Right.
Okay.
So, but we didn't know that because we had that everybody paid $50 plus 50 cents on.
No, that's not correct. Our old ordinance that we had them broken out just like this one is.
But we didn't know that because no one ever told us that.
The little chart that we got really showed the 50. It sounded like everybody in class 8 averaged out.
No, I didn't realize
$50.
That.
Well, I have a big problem with this because the whole thing that I thought was that I'm very disturbed that so many businesses pay such different, hugely different rates. And this doesn't seem to solve that at all for me. And Class 8, I thought was going to be simple and short and clear, but I don't even know. I mean, now we're learning that in one class they pay $200 on the first $2,000 and then $5, and in another one they pay $65 plus $1.90, and then we don't know where that came from. And my whole point in looking at this was to make it more equitable and fair, and if we still don't know where these numbers are coming from, I don't see how that can be.
Well, I think most of the numbers that you're looking at in Class A are set by state.
I never wanted to see the contractors' rates raised. I felt that other businesses through the years, because that rate has been low, have been doing more than their fair share of supporting the business license ordinance. And I think that they deserve a break as well. Every business has the same problems with overhead and taxes on property. Even if you rent a business within the city limits, you know the owner is taxing on property taxes to you. This Class 8, I mean, this is nothing consistent at all as far as I'm concerned.
I don't think it's supposed to be. I think it's a miscellaneous, I think you could call it a miscellaneous class.
Exactly.
Lex has mentioned one thing, and perhaps there's some similar things with some of these other businesses. You mentioned contractors, for instance. They have to have the sticker?
That's correct.
And there's some other things, too. Whereas if you were in Class 3, you would not do that.
Well,
everyone would have to have the same
thing. You would have to apply to everybody in Class 3, and that's just, it's not fair because the other businesses don't operate the same as the contractors do.
But in Class 8, they don't have to apply to everyone? That's the definition of Class 8?
Well, each one of these is so different.
You can't look at Class 8 and call
it. Is that yes or no? They don't have to have the same?
If you let me finish, I'll be happy to explain it to you.
Thank you.
Class 8 is not like the other classes. Class 8 is a catch-all where the businesses are addressed individually. And that's why you've got different sections broken out where it's dealing with one business at a time.
Class 8 for contractors, one of the reasons they're in there is your typical business has an address. Many of these businesses, their home is their address. They're working out of their truck.
Right.
There are subcontractors that... are one day working for one general contractor, another day working for another general contractor. The documents you have before you, we're talking about, are these rates correct, where they come from? This all came from Roy Bates. We did not change the document whatsoever. Gary got it from Roy Bates. This is what he has developed for our city as well as for many other cities in the state. So there's no changes in the documentation that we have here. He just transferred the rates we had previously for Class A to this document. The only change that he recommended to us was that contractors should not be at the rate they were at in Class A, that they needed to be staying in class rate but have a rate system based on the IRS tax identification as a Class 3 would have it. So
you brought up something interesting about contractors. You said that when they get a sticker, this is a completely different subject. When they get, someone asked me about this the other day. When they get a sticker for their truck or get a business permit or whatever you got to get to do some work, is there a criteria of is there a training that they're supposed to have gone through? Is there a certificate that they need to have?
It depends what type of contractor they are. The state's got many different certifications for contractors, and that's why each contractor that comes in and applies for a license is approved by the building inspector. He looks at how they're licensed by the state and determines what they're allowed to do in the city, and then he writes their restrictions on their application so that it'll be reflected in their business license history.
What would be an example of a restriction, say?
Say a specialty contractor who would be somebody who basically just went through a registration with the state, didn't have to take a test. They might be restricted to doing jobs that do not require permits that are of a contract amount of $5,000 or less. You'll see electrical contractors, I think they've got five different classifications where when they're in class five, they can do electrical work that's unlimited. But if, say, they were electrical licensed with a class three, I think the limit would be somewhere in the $300,000 to $400,000 range.
If a property owner wanted to know what their limitations were, could they find out from you?
Well, that depends. I get those calls from citizens quite often. Sometimes, just depending on how old the license account is, sometimes I've got that information readily available to me. When I do not, I oftentimes just pull up the South Carolina Department of Labor Licensing and Regulations website, where anyone can check it. And but usually I'll do that for them and let them know.
Lex.
Yes, ma'am.
Based on your work, and you've worked with this for some time.
Right.
Do you believe that the rates that you're recommending to council tonight is fair and equitable?
I think they're very fair. I think when you look at our rates compared to those throughout the state, if anything, they're low comparatively. I've been asked the question many times, do I get a lot of complaints? And really, I don't. I found working with the businesses that operate in the city of Aiken to be a really fun and enjoyable job, and I don't get that many complaints.
With that, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move that we adopt this ordinance in second reading.
Okay, we need to go to a public hearing.
I'm sorry.
However, that's okay. We had questions we needed to get answers to, I thought, and it's good for the public.
One question.
Yes, sir.
It's on page 12, under B, non-resident. Then in parentheses, it says non-resident double rates do not apply, and I don't quite understand.
Okay, I'll be happy to explain that for you. Now, the first seven classifications, it's stated in the ordinance that the double rates apply. But if you look at the very...
I saw it up above, too, in the old, above that classification, it says non-residents do not apply except where indicated.
Right, and that's just for Class A.
Okay, but then we get under Item B, and it says non-resident double rates do not apply, and I can't...
It's actually double of A. It's actually double of A.
Right. It's because it's spelling it out.
A is for local country or located within a municipality. B.
I understand, but why have after B, which is the double of parentheses that says double rates don't apply?
Well, because you've doubled the rate. for the non-resident. You've doubled the rate for B.
It's, so it wouldn't be quadrupled.
In other words, you've doubled it up here.
It's already the rate is doubled.
Yeah.
In other words,
yeah.
So you wouldn't double the rate. It's already doubled.
No,
it's redundant. We don't need.
Yeah, it's redundant.
I think that's a good point. Really, it does.
Well,
seem to be,
I mean,
if you left this at 40 and 110, then you could say it does apply.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it'd be somewhat confusing, you could say it does not apply. But if you left B at $80, I mean, somebody could interpret that ordinance to say they owe $160.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Or you can leave it at 40 and
it could have been worded differently, I think.
Yeah.
Let the double rate apply.
But I understand it now looking up there. You already see the 80 and you already see the 220.
Okay. It could be.
Okay, any other questions we need to clear up right this minute anyway? If not, thank you, Lex.
Thank
we'll,
you, Mr.
We'll ask our public here. This is a second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, and if you'd like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Yes, sir?
Come on up.
Yes, sir. Just give us your name and address, if you would, for the record.
Yeah, Joe Skyer, 631 Oak Meadow Lane. I wasn't here for this purpose this evening, but it just raised my interest. I'd probably maybe the only contractor present in the room. What I'm hearing is that how does a builder, in a sense, fall into this category? In other words, we pay on our gross amount of work that we do within the city of Aiken. Roughly, how will that impact the builder himself? I mean, specialty contractors that do small jobs or basically subcontract from the builders are at a wholly, total different rate and a total different approach. They pay, I think, a flat fee for their licenses, but a builder pays again on the gross amount, you know, of work that is produced, you know, for that year.
Right.
So the question is, how is that going to affect?
Lex, can you add to this as to how you see it working now, and work? Yeah, if you would, please. You deal with this every day, so hopefully you know right off the top.
Well, to tell you how it's going to affect the business, you'd really have to have their gross receipts in front of you so you could actually give them a number. But just basing it on the information that you've got, where you, I don't know the exact percentage, but looking at the contractors as a whole, I think something like 42% of them paid up $100 or less for their license in fiscal year 04. For all those contractors, their rate next year is actually going to be lower. We'll probably have as high as 60% of our contractors' rates are going to drop, where you're going to see the biggest effect will be, of course, on the ones who have the highest receipts, since they'll be paying, or if it's adopted, would be paying $80 on the first $2,000 for the outside city and then $220 per thousand. You know, if they've got significant receipts, their fee's going to be higher.
Well, let's put it in real numbers. Joe, you build a $250,000 house out at Eagle's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
250 times 210, if your business is out, that's $525.
Right.
You build that house out in Cedar Creek, you know what you pay?
No.
Yeah.
Nothing. So the house in the city of Aiken is going to be at, and we already got them on the water, the sewer, and the tap fees and all that stuff. So don't kid yourself, folks. This is going to raise the construction cost in the city of Aiken. That is not it. You have to, because of the $100,000. I'm telling you. I'm not shooting a messenger here. I'm just telling you that's why I'm going to vote against it, because I thought we would have something that says that in clear black and white, and that ain't what we got. But it's going to raise the cost of houses. Joe?
Yes. Hello.
Well, then, Pat, you disagree with what Roy Bates said about being that we ought to be the class three.
I cannot agree that a manufacturer a manufacturer who doesn't have to pay those other, I don't think the manufacturer has to pay for his trucks and all that stuff. I mean, I'm talking about from what he gets. And I know that they don't add up everything, that the same, there's 250,000, how many subs are there? 25 at least?
Well, it's more, you know, it could be 25 subcontractors, and then you've got suppliers.
Well, just look at the subcontractors. He pays at 250, divide 250 by 25, times 2.10, whammo. It's not 525. It's 1,050 because the subs got to pay the same thing that add up to the 250. That's the real world. It's going to cost you more money to build houses than Aiken.
Well, it's going to cost more for everything when these business licenses are in place. I mean, the manufacturer's got to pay a property tax on his commercial property. He's got to pay a tax on his equipment. I mean, it's that's why I'm not for this thing. I think it's the most backward tax we could ever have.
We have to have, there has to be a business license. It has to be. I'm just questioning the 110, which basically is doubled to go to 220. I think it's going to hit us on
certain
things.
What about the guys in 1 and 2 who have been paying double all these years? That was okay?
I think 1 and 2 are going to be, their rates are actually coming down, aren't they, Roger? From what they paid last year.
One and two? I don't understand.
My point is every other category has had higher rates for the last how many years?
But they're
to make up this $1,650,000.
They're all coming down.
The general rates have come down. My problem with this thing is I think it's hitting the contractors, which is going to hit the buyers of homes heavier than anybody else. So that's,
I have a problem
again,
with it, too.
It still comes down to if we're trying to develop a fair system, objectively, they belong in Class 3. We are applying the Class 3 rate to them. It's fair.
I just wish I would have seen that in writing with any. And I think that even you would think that that's what we were getting. And I know the explanation that we got, but I don't agree with
that. But one of the things that we need to look at is that the IRS says that they have the ability to pay. And that's why they're supposed to go to that class rate.
That's right.
They do have the ability to pay. Now, whether they pass it on or not is another issue. But if we follow what we're following for all the other classes, supposedly those other classes have the ability to pay, and that's why they're in those classes, then contractors really do have the ability to pay. If you're basing it on what they're building and what they're making, then they do have the ability to pay.
And I am
very concerned about how that affects a new home buyer. But I think at some point we have to look at the fairness issue for all the businesses. And then we need to turn around and look at how fair is it going to be to someone who is not a business person, who might bear the brunt of what we fail to do here, or what we fail to regulate in a fair manner here. How does that affect other people other than business owners who may bear the brunt of us not having them pay their fair share?
All I'm saying, if you trust the IRS that way about them being fair.
But everything else is based on what the IRS has the ability to
do. I'm being told that, and I'm being told that a lot of this was set up by Mr. Bates. I know for a fact the $1.10 is set up by us somehow. I know that. And the double is set up by us.
That's
the $2.20 is set up by us.
That's correct.
Right. So,
you know, just as a comparison, you know, because these contractors work throughout the state, a lot of them are from Columbia and other areas, and they come into Aiken, they build houses, they do other work. The rate currently in Columbia is just under twice what we have right now. Myrtle Beach charges contractors five times what we charge. Greenville, around three times what we charge.
You're talking about the average of what they pay.
Four times. This is all
you're talking about the average of what they pay.
This is all based on $1.5 million worth of business. If I went to $2 million, it would still be that same amount. $3 million would still be that same amount. It's just a ratio basis here that every other city except for Greenwood charges higher for contractors now than we do, anywhere from two to five times higher. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that as a comparison, because contractors are a general contractor or subs work in all other cities in the state, and this is the vast majority of our contractors. I think we looked at before, like 80 or 90% of our contractors are outside the city.
Yes, sir.
And so they're paying this rate not just in Aiken. So when we double it, we'll still be lower than most other cities.
Mm-hmm. If you care about it. I don't think it affects the subcontractor as much as it affects, you know, the builder. But, of course, all the subcontractors pass the cost on to us. And our problem, I mean, it's not your problem, but we have escalating insurance rates.
Sure.
It's just going out of sight. And it's not only, you know, these fees, but it's everything combined. And I mean, you just got to watch it. So you know, you don't want to try to hurt your marketplace, because you know it is a reasonable place to come and buy a nice house. Where in some areas, of course, like near the coastal areas, you know, prices are totally out of sight. So we have a different buyer here.
Joe, you find that you're building in Columbia. You feel like your construction costs are higher, lower, same in Columbia?
Well, actually, our construction costs are probably less than they are in Aiken. Aiken seems to be, contractors get a little better price in Aiken. If you're in Woodside, they hit you with, you know, it's more expensive to build in the Woodside or, you know, a little more in Cedar Creek.
I'm talking about your cost.
My overall cost, depending on the product that we're building, is less up in Columbia than it is over here in Aiken.
That was my point.
Another thing we haven't mentioned that worries me is that our merchants are dealing, are competing with internet purchasers now who pay no tax. So we want them to be here. We don't want Aiken to be a bunch of empty buildings with everybody on the internet, and they're competing against these people.
Joe, if you build me a 2,400 square foot house, mm-hmm. with some with 10-foot ceilings and maybe a few rooms with eight, and I've got all these fancy things in it like you might find at a house in Woodside, you're telling me it's cheaper to build a house in the same house in Columbia than in Aiken?
Well, it all depends on, again, your actual location. You know, Woodside, I mean, they're getting prices $140, $150 a square foot.
She's talking about cost.
I think Joe's hitting it on the head,
yeah.
And we need not skirt the issue. It is about location. You can build cheaper, yeah. on the north side of town. I mean, don't be fooled by
it. It depends on what, you know, you have an escalating property cost. So that has to be,
right.
You know, filtered,
yeah.
in. You know,
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about your cost to build. You were saying that it's
right
cheaper to build.
Right now, well, in Columbia, I mean, I build up in a place called Lake Carolina, and, you know, that is probably running, that's running around $127, $126 a square foot. And Woodside, we're running about $137 a square foot.
Cost.
And location.
And location, and it depends again on, you know, what we're paying for the property, because that'll vary in how much work you have to do with the piece of property. But let's say we're on an even lot, we have houses up there that are costing a little less than what, you know, we have up here. You know, and it depends on your competition also. I mean, there's a lot of variables that, you know, that filter into, you know, pricing the home.
What your subcontractors are charging are a big part.
Right. We use a lot of subcontractors. Majority of our subcontractors are from Columbia. There's a couple that travel up, you know, from here, you know, to Columbia, but very few. We have about two that do that. But most of our contractors are done, are up in Columbia. That we use, and then we have separate contractors down here in Aiken, which we keep busy pretty much all year round.
Do you keep up with how much you pay for your business licenses in Columbia versus here in Aiken?
Proportionately, right? We have, again, Some of the sewer systems up there are private, so you know when you buy the lots, it's actually built into the price of the lot. So you know we paid like on these lots that we bought in Lake Carolina, we had $1,000 sewer fee, which went to a private owner. And then you have your regular water meter fees and things like that. But I can get you actual numbers. I don't have them off the top of my head, but I can work that up and you know send it over to you. I can ask Joyce to do that for you if you want to get a comparison of what a permit would cost us to pull a permit here versus what we're paying up there for you know same you know cost of a house.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Does anyone else would like to talk about this particular ordinance?
Well, I just want to say something while I'm sitting here. If I got to pay more money, I'm going to charge everybody else more money.
Would you like to have your name here on the record for that, and that, please? Well, and I think that's the same case as a lot of these, and especially in Category 8 that we're looking at. When you look at the power companies, and you look at
Philip Mosley,
some of these
519 Wildberry Road.
Very good.
And
you in the construction business?
Yes, plumbing.
Yes.
And everything's already high enough. And if I pay, if I'm charged more, and then I'm gonna, I mean, if I have to pay more, I'm gonna charge everybody more.
Okay. Anyone else like to speak on this issue? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration now. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move for approval of this ordinance on second reading. I have some concerns, but I have to tell you that that I think staff has researched this not only for themselves in presenting it to us, but since we have been studying it, they have gone back and given us information after information. And I have to trust that that this is a good ordinance, and so I'm going to move for adoption.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, I second that motion. Also have a comment. You know, I think we're all tonight are ready to put this to bed. We've been debating this issue for over a year, and the whole issue is whether to convert from the old system to the new system. Now, staff has said that the Municipal Association told us over a year ago to change this system, and Anita and Lex have both told us that that's something that could have been handled by staff. And I just want for the record to know that we did pay an additional $12,500 to Roy Bates to come coach us on how to do what we could have done in-house. I do want to take a second to comment about Councilman Vauder's Dear Doctor letter, the letter she sent out to all the doctors, not to the small business people. I didn't get one, but to the just to the doctors. First thing I'd like to comment on, she said she'd like to see the contractors put into the proper category and at the same time enjoy the rate they enjoyed last year. I don't see how you can move anybody from class 3 to 8 to 3 and have the same rate.
I gave you that.
Just hold up just a second.
Okay.
Another comment she made, she commented that the mayor has stated that he knows of no business who had moved out of the city of Aiken because of business license. She used Bobby's Barbecue as an example. I talked with Bobby Saturday, and he said absolutely not. He didn't have a city business license when he started in business. He was in the county, and he didn't move out of the county, out of the city into the county. And he also stated that he does have a city business license to do catering when he comes in Aiken. I also asked him if he had a problem with the rates that we charged, and he said no, he was fine with that. And was glad he could do business in the city of Aiken. The last paragraph I'd like to comment is when she says the finance department has put off providing this information and to pass the budget so they have plenty of time to get the tax notices out. And I take issue with that. As Councilman Clyburn said, our staff does an excellent job. They work hard on the budget, Lex and Nita and her staff. They worked hard on this, and I've never had them ask them any question that they didn't give me the information for. So, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Any other comments?
I just want to comment. Staff's done a great job on it. I don't disagree with what he's saying. I just disagree with going from 55 to 110 to 220, and I think it's going to affect our cost. That's why I'm going to vote against it.
Okay. I'm going to vote in favor of it because I think it's fair. There's no question we need to move from the sick to the next. That's a given. And I think with Roy Bates helping us, Roy's the dean of city attorneys for 30-some years. He's retired now. He was in on this to start with when the business license came up. I take his word for it. I take his word that he says if we want to be constitutional, we need to give the rate that's in class three to the construction contractors. And so I'm going to go on what our staff tells us too. I think they've done a superb job. I appreciate it. We've been talking about this issue now for 2 years, I know, and more prominently in the last year. But I think it's as good as we can get right now. If we see changes we need to make down the road, then we ought to consider changes. If something seems unfair to us as we go and apply this, then let's look at it again. We need the flexibility to be able to do that, but I think it's fair as it sits to our knowledge that we know of right now, and also based on Roy's advice to us. So, excuse me, Ms. Price.
I agree with you, Mr. Mayor, that it is fair, and in fact, I do want to say it's more fair than it was, and we're also much more up to date using the NAICS instead of the SIC. And though I sympathize very much with Jane Vaughter's position, I know that she would like to see a reduction in everyone's taxes, and I think that's a very healthy view that we ought to have in everything we do. So, but notwithstanding that, I think for where we are right now, I am going to vote for the ordinance as it's drafted.
Not to prolong the discussion, I'm ready. A couple of questions.
Okay, I'd just like to add, Dick, I appreciate what you said, and Jane wanted to see the taxes reduced or eliminated for everybody. I don't think there's anybody on this council that doesn't want to see taxes reduced. But we've got to stay in a physically solid, stable position in our city. And we all know that the losses we've taken over the last 2 years have been over $1 million from the communications fee and the vehicle tax reduction. That's money we don't have anymore. And it's not a case of just saying, well, let's cut this thing, you know, let's cut it in half or whatever. Where's the money going to come from to do the things we want to do in our city that we've done over the years? And still not had a property tax increase, and we're going to talk about this in a couple of more issues. For the 17th year, we've not raised the millage in the city of Aiken. And one of the reasons is because we have the growth and not people moving out of the city. So we say whatever we want to about people moving out of the city or not coming in the city. From my view, people are coming into the city in mass.
Can we call the question?
I go to the ribbon cuttings in just a minute. We'll call for the yeah. But I want to get that point. So go ahead. Call for the question. Do we have a motion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor of this approval? Show of hands. Okay. Opposed? Okay. Passes 5-2. Thank you. New business, first reading of an ordinance to annex 20.6 acres east of Hidden Haven. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the city of Aiken, certain property consisting of 20.3 acres of land, more or less owned by Joseph Skyer, and to zone the same, planned residential. This project's been in the making for a long time, and Joe has been very patient trying to work through a number of issues. When it first came before the Planning Commission, he had requested zoning for 6,000 acre lots, which would have allowed up to about 150 homes there. He has since come back, made a number of different changes. To now we have a planned residential, which is a concept plan that you have, which shows exactly what he's going to be building.
The question was asked the last time we got together, if he didn't annex in the city, he wanted to do this in the county, how many units could he have, what could he build out there? He could have around 40 units in the county on the well and septic system, so it would be basically the same number of units that he's asking for now. Two different concerns that were raised by the residents out there and by City Council were there were some safety issues going through the development itself. As you're exiting out of Hidden Haven, especially where you get into the pool area, the road takes a very sharp turn. It needs to be straightened out. There probably needs to be some widening there. There needs to be some improvements. We had asked their engineer to look at it. We in turn looked at Silver Bluff to determine what improvements may be needed out there, because again you have a safety problem out at Silver Bluff and Hidden Haven Drive currently. According to the information we got from their engineers, to realign Hidden Haven Drive so that you would increase the site distance, it wouldn't be such a sharp curve, especially as you get close to Tracewood Place, it'd be probably between $15,000 and $20,000. Larry Morris looked at improvements on Silver Bluff Road to add a turning lane in there in the center, which essentially is widening that roadway, and had estimated would cost around $35,000 to do the work on Silver Bluff Road. So that was part of our traffic management ordinance as to, you know, how do you deal with these things. One of the questions that's come up several times is, if you have this type of improvement, what portion of the city be required to improve since it's an existing condition versus how much is attributed to a new developer in the area. Currently there's about 400 cars per day coming out of Hidden Haven. This development would have a little over 400 cars, so it's about double the number of cars that are currently there. With that in mind, if improvements can be made on Hidden Haven Drive, it would seem to be fair to have a 50-50 split. The development that Joe Skyer would be building would be 50%. They would pay for it. The city would contribute the other 50%. If you look at the entrance on Hidden Haven Drive at Silver Bluff Road, there's really around 800 cars that are currently coming out of that location. Again, 400 being attributed in the future by this new development, and so it would be one-third, two-thirds. The city would be paying around two-thirds the improvement, and this development one-third. Now, saying that, if you decide to approve this development as presented, Silver Bluff, as we all know, will be improved in the near future. They're going to be coming back with survey results, and there will be a decision as to what type of widening is necessary out there this fall. And then they would be able to start the planning directly. And based on what I understand is sometime in 2006, probably start construction, assuming that the work that is done out there would take very little right-of-way acquisition, because the right-of-way acquisition takes anywhere from 1 year to 2 years, depending on the amount you need it. But if there was very little right-of-way acquisition, they actually could be in construction in 2006. So council would have to make a decision, again, if you want to go forward with this. Is it, how important is it to widen that roadway section now? Joe Skyer started this summer with construction of the development. The first thing that happens, you put the water, the sewer, the roads. The first house probably would not be completed till sometime this time next year. So it takes about a year from the time you start construction to the time you have your first house even completed. Based on that, you may want to say it's not even worth it to spend the $35,000 or to do something minor to make some improvements, knowing that the state is going to go forward with their work. But if you do want to do the widening at Silver Bluff Road now, it's around $35,000. The city share would be around $12,000. Would be around $24,000, and Joe's share would be around $12,000. So those were the two safety aspects that you looked at. When the Planning Commission looked at it, and they unanimously decided not to go forward, again, there was a lot of questions on the safety. There was a lot of questions on the density. And these are some of the reasons why we have delayed bringing this to council to try to work out some of these details to you. So we feel like we've answered most of those questions. You may have still some questions of Larry Morris concerning the safety items, or Pete Frommer. Ed Evans could answer any questions you may have concerning the density and the type of development that would be placed out there. I know we have a couple of residents here from Hidden Haven that are very interested. But I think we have now gotten all the information you need to try to make some decision on this. And this is the first reading of ordinance to annex 20.6 acres consisting of those 44 homes as in the planned residential. And if you approve it tonight, then we'd have a second reading and public hearing at the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Roger. Are there citizens here that would like to speak on this issue? Okay. Well, Council, do we have a motion and a second to allow citizens to speak on first reading?
Second.
Okay, we have a second. All in favor? Okay, this is a formality on first reading. Okay. Let me ask before we ask you to come up, Roger, I can't find them, and I'm probably overlooking it somewhere, but it says if Council recommends approval, there are four conditions. Where are these conditions?
You know what? I looked at for that this afternoon, too.
Oh, you did, too?
Okay. And I couldn't find them either because I thought, well, maybe they're in the original memo.
Ed, could you come up and just read them to us, please, so that we'll...
All I saw was one condition that the RMC office needed to have all those conditions attached to the plat, but I couldn't find them either.
So okay, good. All right.
Is that a traffic study consistent with the proposed traffic impact ordinance and including an assessment of the impact of the proposed development on Hidden Haven be submitted and reviewed by the city's on-call traffic engineer prior to consideration by City Council? That when the property is developed, Hidden Haven Drive and any other roads within Hidden Haven used to access the proposed subdivision be improved to city standards prior to issuance of any certificate of occupancy for a building on the subject property. That the toe of the exterior slope or edge of the required stormwater detention pond be no closer than 25 feet to any adjoining property zoned or used residentially.
Is that detention or retention?
Detention.
Detention, okay.
And of course, since then, I think you've adopted the amendment to the land development regulations that would require that 25-foot separation. And four, that if Polaris Drive is an entrance to the proposed development, there be an untouched buffer at least 20 feet in depth along the northern boundary of the subject property adjacent to any lot occupied by a dwelling with additional evergreen screening provided as approved by the planning director prior to the issuance of a certificate of occupancy for any building.
Okay, those are the four. Okay, thank you. I'm not sure I got all those words, but I'm sure.
If you decide to move forward, we can have this on the next meeting, these four conditions. And some of them have already been really answered in, as far as the roadway improvements that are needed and the fact of needing a traffic study with 44 homes, traffic study would not be needed because it does not meet the numbers.
I think one thing to always keep in mind, of course, we have to keep this in mind, too, on any property wanting to be annexed in the city, is that what happens if it's not annexed? You know, what's the worst case, that could happen? And Roger, I think, touched on this, certainly, when he was talking. But I guess you could potentially have the same number of residences, but with no particular city ordinances or landscaping, tree ordinances, any of those things. Potentially no improvements to the road until what we finally get in probably 2 years with DOT and other things as well. But the point I'm making is that Joe could still go ahead and build on the land. So we've got this dilemma we always do about, well, is it better to go ahead and annex and apply the city ordinances, which I think he appreciates, most everybody appreciates those, or not, when they can build anyway. So that's the way I see it. And that's always my dilemma. If it's not other people's dilemma, it's the kind of thing I have to think about when I make a decision.
But now, whoever would like to speak, just come up to the mic, if you would, and introduce yourself and tell us where you live. And
I'm Carl Champlin. I'm the president of the Hidden Haven Homeowners Association. I live at 410 Capella Drive in Hidden Haven.
Yes, sir.
We realize that we can't stop this thing from going ahead. But the thing is, you've got the cart before the horse. You're saying that you can put it off any road improvements for a year.
No, I'm not saying, we would. I'm just saying.
Before the first house is complete. How do you account for the traffic of the cement trucks, the logging trucks, all of the construction trucks are going in and out of there, they're going to have haters going in there. How do you account for that? Those people don't care about traffic signs. It would be a real problem if Larry Morris came to work one day and got hit by a cement truck going around that curve there.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to go in there anyway, whether or not it's in the city.
Get the road straightened out first.
But we can patrol. We can do the best job we can with our public safety and patrol. That's one thing we can do.
I think maybe you misunderstood what I said. I was talking about whether or not the improvements at Silver Bluff Road should be delayed. The improvements at that S-curve or that on Hidden Haven Drive should be done right away.
Right.
Those need to be done. I'm just mentioning to council they have an option whether or not they think they feel that Silver Bluff Road is going to be widened quick enough, or do they want to spend the $35,000 to go ahead and do the improvements at Silver Bluff Road?
I think anybody that says there isn't that much traffic out there doesn't live out there early in the morning.
Well, we know there's traffic.
You can't get out of there at 6 o'clock in the morning if you tried. That's my point. I know we can't stop it. But at least let's get this thing straightened up so the concrete trucks and so forth won't run through there. We got kids playing in there.
I don't disagree with anything you're saying.
That's all I have to say.
Oh, okay, thank you, Carl. Is anyone else would like to speak on this issue? Okay, well, yes, sir? Joe?
Please come down. Don't say anything. We want to get you on tape, Joe.
Okay.
Did we estimate how much the curb is going to cost, and you know, to straighten out that curb in the road?
The estimate that we received from Mark Ram, who works for you, said it was going to be $15,000 to $20,000. As well as his estimate, and I'm suggesting that whatever it costs, you know, mm-hmm. it's 15, if it's 20, if it's 10, if it's 25, whatever the cost is, it would be a split 50-50.
Okay. Well, that's
us
fine.
And you.
Yeah. And, you know, we can contribute a little bit more to you if you want to go ahead and, you know.
We'd be happy if you want to contribute more.
To improve Silver Bluff if you need to do that at this time.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that should be. I mean, if mm-hmm. we approve this, it should be done prior to all this traffic starting.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the points was to do it before mm-hmm. the, what was it, before the construction started. What's your word, Ed? Before? Okay, certificate of occupancy. How does that sound to you?
Well, that would the improvements are going to be done by the city, I think.
We would work with the state, and Larry, I'm not too sure if we've gone that far as who would do the improvements. We would probably contract it out, and but we'd have to cooperate with the state. We would not be asking you to do the improvements. All we'd be doing is asking you to help pay the bill.
Yes. So as far as that goes, I mean, as far as the issuance of a certificate of occupancy, then we're dependent upon the city getting the improvements done. So that would have to go on, I guess, concurrently with, you know, as we improve the interior portion of the property.
Typically, Larry, you're talking, you already talked to the state about making those improvements, I believe. And if that's the case and the state's willing to go with us and do this,
We'd probably have to get a highway permit, work with local jurisdiction, and it would take us a minimum of 3 to 6 months to get the work done. It'd be a very similar, if you all recall the improvements we made at Banks Mill Road and Powder House Road on Pine Log, we knew that the construction on Pine Log Road was going to take several more years before they get started. We were having bottlenecks at those two intersections, so we filled in the ditch with some pipe, asphalted over that ditched area so that you get the existing roadway became a left-hand turn movement and you're able to circulate the rest of the traffic around those intersections. Essentially, that's what we're talking about doing here.
Right. I have talked to the local maintenance engineer. I have not talked to any of the Columbia staff. He is certainly in support of what we would do on Silver Bluff. And that would be my recommendation, is to move ahead with the Silver Bluff improvements as well as the Hidden Haven Drive improvements. Just from a personal note, my daughter was almost rear-ended there Sunday afternoon by a horse trailer, 3 horses in it.
On Silver Bluff?
On Silver Bluff. Getting out in the mornings on Silver Bluff, the traffic coming from Woodside, it takes 4 to 6 minutes to get out. Turning lanes not going to help that, but certainly it would help the traffic flow going the other direction. So I would recommend we move forward. We stand ready. I know Mark can give me the plan work that he's already done. We can move forward with the Hidden Haven Drive improvements fairly rapidly. We should look at some speed humps on Polaris. When we do that, there are several children in the neighborhood, and Polaris from the stop sign on into Joe's property is a straight shot. It is. It would be a speeding problem, I feel, down through that. So that'd be one thing we'd look at the same time, I feel.
I think also, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you may need a couple more traffic signs also. You know, just to some warning signs and things like that, children at play or things like in that nature, and some speed limit signs. I think there's only one speed limit sign. That would, in conjunction with the speed bumps and, you know, maybe an additional stop sign at one of the other intersections, I think, you know, you can solve a lot of the problems by doing that.
Larry, where is the straightening out portion? You keep the 15 to 20,000 exactly.
That would be at the right past Tracewood Drive on Hidden Haven Drive.
It's on the front,
just prior to hitting Cirrus. Okay.
Whose land is that?
Let me show you that.
Is there any reason why we didn't bring this to, a new plan? What was turned down was RS6. Is that correct? That's right.
Right. The comprehensive plan that was for 7 units to the acre. What we did was we worked on this HUD plan with Ed Evans and Roger to get it down to improved amount of lots.
Much improved plan, no question about it. I'm just concerned about having a vote for the Planning Commission. So, and it really, they never got a chance to see this.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, we had it on the big screen last time, but it was up on the big screen the last time we did it.
Yeah, to me, that Roger, that's the way to go. And Joe, I don't want to.
Ed, when they voted this down, they always voted down on our RS6 or is under planned residential. I believe it was RS6. I think with the point that you bring up, if that's the case, we could always, if you prove it on first reading, we could always send it back to them to look at.
I would feel better about the Planning Commission at least seeing
plan
what
residential.
They didn't. But I don't. I'm
they
sorry.
Turned down plan residential
on June 15th of last year. The commission voted unanimously to recommend denial of RS6 zoning, and then in December they saw the new application for plan residential.
Without the same plans that we now are seeing it?
Yeah. We had a lot of the, what it was, we didn't have these issues worked out. for the traffic.
So they didn't vote on it then?
No, they really didn't.
They voted 6-0 to recommend denial, but it was, I think, the same 44-acre plan you're seeing now, I believe.
All right, so they have seen this.
Yes.
Yep.
Ed, my concern is the 6-0 vote. Is it because the ingress, egress, just give me, I know that I've read this, these few pages of planning notes, but plus the should it besides the ingress, egress?
No, it was back in December, and I don't remember all the details, and I haven't reread the minutes. I mean, I think the main concern was the impact on Hidden Haven, and again, I can't point to any specific anything out of the minutes, but frankly, I didn't hear a lot of reasons given with the motion, specifically why they were voting against it, if I recall correctly. But my sense was it was concern about the impact on Hidden Haven, and yes, maybe concern about the intersection of Hidden Haven and Silver Bluff and what the traffic situation
is. The narrow road going in.
Yeah.
Joe, have you done a design RS-15 on this? How many lots you would get with RS-15, which is the highest residential size we have in the city?
I remember we looked at that. It was either last fall or this. We looked at so many different things there, and it came out to, I believe, 42 lots, if I recall correctly. Some were higher than 15,000, some were right at 15. There might have been a couple that were just a little bit less.
Well, this is my feeling on it. I would send it back to them at RS-15 with buffer around it to, because if we're not in favor of any residential here, then he has one choice and one choice only, and that's to put well and septic tank and go and do his double wise if he wants to, and does that help and not do any of these improvements? I don't think that, well, I guess the county, would the county require you to do all these improvements?
Well, the county's much more lenient as far as what you can put back there. You're not restricted to just strictly.
What I'm saying is you already have that zone in the county, but it's the water and septic. I mean, you could not do this many. You had to put, it'd increase your density.
Well, lower the density, but I don't know. I think we can get around 42 lots out of them. But what happened was the last time we went before the city council, since then, I think the people from Hidden Haven are in favor of the project because they want to see these improvements done. That's what they told me after the last meeting. They want the improvements done, and that's what we've been working on. And I think from the last time we were at the city council, that was an issue because we really didn't have anything worked out
right
as far as what we were going to do. It was just we just went back with a plan unit development showing that we had less lots than the comprehensive plan would allow. But now that we've got these issues worked out, people over there would like to see these improvements done because it would help the situation not only it would help the situation immensely that they face right now. I honestly think that at this point that a recommendation for approval would be the best way to go.
How much is this going to cost the city? I'm looking at two-thirds of $40,000.
Between $35,000 and $40,000. If it was built in the county, in other words, if you went ahead and put the double wides in the county, I'm not too sure how we would deal with traffic coming out of an area onto a city street that needs improvement.
Well, what about...
we might want to have to pay with all of it. I'm not too sure.
What about the fire requirement that there not be more than this? There's like four times what we're supposed to have, right?
What fire requirement?
The land development regulations limits the length of a dead end road to 1,000 feet. Polaris Drive ends at about 2,500 feet. Proposed road would add another 1,700 feet so that one of the cul-de-sacs would be 4,200 feet.
Actually, I think you have a better situation if you keep it in the city fighting the fire than if you have it going into the county. because you're going to have city water and you'll have city hydrants throughout the entire development.
Did you see the comments of the staff about the open space that was really just not usable open space because of the way it was organized?
Well, I think what we have on this plan right now, that was something that we were discussing, I think, with Ed, but I think we have a couple of areas that you come in off your cul-de-sacs and get to the, like right back here. There are areas that we developed that you can come off of those areas and get to the open space.
I'm concerned about the 25 feet between the backs of those woodside lots. I don't know what that terrain is, frankly. I don't know if it's wooded. I don't know what it is.
It's pines, not tremendously wooded. There's 25 feet you see back there on the... The reason why I know it well is because I had to move that fence to take care of some. It was on the wrong line, so I walked that entire thing about three times. So there's pine trees. It's a little bit open down here, but the key here is we've already run into the problem with retention when you tear out every tree. When we're talking about buffer here, we want an undisturbed buffer. That's a very important distinction. I think we've learned that the hard way as far as in the last 60 days.
I think we'll have that with the, we've got more than 25 feet at that point.
I think the real critical aspect here, Joe, is density. The people and I understand whether we got to fix the problems, whether it's a year and a half or 2 years, whenever Silver Bluff is fixed. But I think this is a question of density. I would suggest we try to get a density closer to RS-15 and then still keep the buffer around it. And if that was the case, I think it would be a win-win.
I don't think that's going to work because we had looked at that. We had looked at that before.
Now I'm talking about a density requirement, which would be about 42 lots versus 44. How many is this?
We have 44.
44. What I'm saying is, you keep the same density. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about you keep the same density that would be required as an RS-15, but you keep the buffer. To me, that would be a reasonable compromise, but I think that plan should go back to the planning department and submit it to, or we could approve that and then send it back and get the input from the homeowners association. To me, that would be a win-win for everybody.
Well, I also need to have X amount of lots. Now, most of these lots are 9,000 square foot up to 14,000 square foot, and in order to make the project feasible for me, I have to get so many lots out of this thing. When we got the property originally, we were looking at a comprehensive plan of 7 units to the acre.
To me, this is just me speaking, but it would be better for the city to fix the corner property. What should have happened here before we took the property in, the road should have been to the specification, and that would have hurt. Somebody would have had to ante up, and I understand why we didn't do that. But it seems to me it would be our responsibility to fix a corner that ain't right now. I'm talking about the 15,000 in this curve here now, which is dangerous. It's dangerous right now for city taxpayers. That's our responsibility. To me, I would rather have the city stand up and say, we're going to fix that $15,000 to $20,000 problem, and you're going to lose two lots and do the 40, do whatever the number is that would be RS-15, which would be 42 lots. You understand what I'm saying? And then it's a win-win.
Well, I don't think we can get 42 lots out of it and keep all these open spaces, unless you include that in your square footage.
Now you're taking somebody on here who's done this, okay?
I know.
And
I'm being honest with you too.
You have to try to meet us a little bit halfway because you ain't going to get the density of 42 when you go in and say, but we have to work with you. To me, I'm not saying keep all of it, but it needs to. The buffer needs to be there. And we submit that to the planning.
The reason why we did it this way was that. And let me just say, the reason why we did it this way, where we have the buffers and we put it into the PUD, was so that if it gets approved, and we need to get and these lots are not small, they're large lots, and we're not building big houses back there. But if we take the density out of there and take it out of PUD, then if it's approved and I sell the property, and it's not PUD, then another developer can come in there and do, you know, something else with the property because it's been pre-approved. So this is why we worked on this with Ed and worked on this with Roger, and this is what we came up with. So I think this is a good plan. And if, you know, if we build it out, you know, it's going to stay 44 lots or 42. But if we sell it, it still has to stay 44 or 42. I mean, it just has, you know, because it's approved by, you know, as a PUD development.
Right, right.
We understand. This plan has to be followed. In other words, if it's approved, it's got to be followed this way. It cannot be changed.
I have a question about the petition. The petition says 44 houses, and 70 people have said they oppose it. So is that, did they not know what they were signing? Or, I mean, more than 70, actually, when you start adding these
letters. Yeah, that was the first time around. I mean, we've been through this, and, you know, the people from Hidden Haven at this time endorsed the project. Roger endorses the project. He's not here. And Ed Evans endorses the project. So, I mean, at this point, you know, this has been going on for almost a year. Mm-hmm. You know, we're at a you know, point where we need to, you know, try to get the thing through, worked on, get these roads improved for everyone. I don't want to open up a project where I have problems with the road system, because that doesn't benefit, you know, my development. We need to work together to get the roads improved, because that's going to help me sell these houses, you know, once we have everything in place. I mean, anytime we do a development, we have to make sure that we have everything, you know, in order, because people just go somewhere else. You know, if they're not happy, they're going to go somewhere else. So I agree, we need to do something with that road system, and we're willing to donate and share the cost on this road system.
Joe, I think someone behind you would like to speak. Would you like to speak, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Joe.
John Reward, 66 Sirius Drive, Hidden Haven. And Mr. Skyris just said that Hidden Haven was endorsing his plan, and I don't believe that's the case. I don't know anybody out there that is endorsing this plan. I'm certainly not. There's several reasons, just the traffic that it's going to create, but beyond that, it's the construction traffic that I'm worried about. You know, it's they're not going to get this built overnight, and it's going to be construction traffic in and out of there for probably a couple of years.
Yeah.
And that's my main problem with it.
What do you propose there? I mean, if he doesn't come in the city, there's still going to be building there. If he chooses to go ahead.
That could be, but the Planning Commission isn't going along with anything here either. I mean, you're just assuming that just if he doesn't do it, somebody else will.
Yes, I am.
And I think that a man ought to be able to build on his property.
Right.
But the only way I can see developing this, I mean, 3 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago, this property came on the market. It was divided into like 12 lots of 2 to 3 acres apiece. And I looked seriously at buying one back there, but I didn't do it. And I wish I would have bought one right in the middle of it, but I didn't. But at the time, the only way I could see it, or when I heard it was all sold as one parcel, my gut feeling was that Woodside Development bought it and was going to develop it from that side, because that's really the only logical way to come in there. Now, I haven't been back in there in probably 2 years, but I know there was at least two lots in Woodside that back up to this that were vacant, and it would have been very easy to access from that side. And I really, my gut feeling is that when Mr. Skyer bought it, that's what he was planning to do, because he was building over there on the Woodside side. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but that's the only thing logical that I can think of.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's going to happen.
But, no, I guess it's not.
So we've got to deal with what we think is going to happen.
If you're going to annex this, I think you ought to do it and zone it, manufactured home, the same as Hidden Haven is. I don't know what the density would be, but it would cut down the construction traffic 95%. I mean, you wouldn't have all these construction vehicles running back and forth.
So you'd rather have mobile home back there than manufactured?
Yes, consistent with Hidden Haven, double wides.
So you know what that would mean. It would be probably three times the amount of houses. Because look at these. I mean, if you take the density on what, if you look at the lot sizes you have now versus these, and no green space required on manufactured homes, I mean, you know, you would end up not with 44, probably 100. I don't know how many. It would be a lot more than 44.
But you would still have to prove the density, would you not?
No.
And if it's zoned for exactly what's there now, we would, if it was zoned for the double wides going in there, the same lot sizes, then I don't see how we could deny them that. I would rather have a CS. This is a density situation and a traffic situation. And, if we don't do anything, he would probably go in there and put 21 one-acre lots with well and septic tanks. Don't fix the road, don't fix nothing, and just go do it and sell them and be done with it. Is that the best? Is that in the best interest of you or the city or everybody? And I don't think it is. I think it's in the best interest to fix the road, have it in the city with water and sewer, and the question is there a compromise here as far as density? And that's really what we're talking about.
I mean, he could try to sell it that way, but I mean, it took 20 years for Hidden Haven to fill up.
Well, if you're trying to find an acre lot now,
it took 20 years.
Yeah, I know. And that's why nobody wants to do the density or what's there.
I mean, that's right.
You're talking about these homes. They're going to be fairly nice homes. I mean, they're going to be. I think it's a question of whether we have X in the county or whether we have Y in the city and getting the road fixed. And if there's a way that the majority of people in Hidden Haven could come together and say, yes, we're willing to accept this and we're willing to sit down and work it out, I think that it can be worked out. So, but I'm concerned about it staying in the county with well and septic tank and it doesn't help anybody. I mean, that's just, well, think about it. I mean, he's either going to do that or he doesn't have any other choice, because he's not, the access to Woodside is not going to work. I mean, all those lots are sold, and I'm not sure that it could be pulled in under the PUD over there anyway. But and this has always been part of Hidden Haven.
That's right.
Part. The density was assumed to be the same and whatever.
Yeah. And most of the long-term residents out there bought when that was designated as Hidden Haven.
But most of the concerns,
phase three of Hidden Haven.
Most of the concerns have had to do with the traffic, and there was concerns about the traffic on the construction side of it too. That is true. Anyway,
but I think we need to go ahead and proceed. This is first reading. We need to do something. And then if it passes, then second reading, we can invite, I mean, all the folks can come
been,
here.
You know,
speak
in front of you three or four times, and you've always voted it down. And I really don't see any changes made yet.
I think we've got a lot of changes. I think we've got some agreements here that we've not had before. And I think that's exactly, I think that happened after planning probably voted on the way they did. I think we've resolved some of the key issues that were perhaps unresolved before, such as improving the roads and who's going to pay for that. And that's the main, not only inside Hidden Haven, but
that was a given. That was going to have to be done.
It's not a given. Nothing's a given. If we deny it and do nothing here, it may not get done anyway. I guess I don't understand the reluctance on your part or others who don't think it's the best thing to allow this to come into the city. Pat's alluded to the reasons, and we've talked about them the last 40 minutes. either way, the land is going to be developed. Now, you can guess as to when it's going to be developed. Who knows? Maybe it would be 20 years. But it's going to be developed. So don't you want it developed in a way that's in the best interest of the citizens?
Of course I do.
Well, that's what we're trying to do, too. That's why we're doing all the talking about it. We want it that way, too.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I just want to say to the resident that when you look at placing mobile units there versus the homes that Joe is proposing to build, personally, you're better off with the homes. One of the things that I noticed with uniqueness that Joe said when he came forward that I don't find stated by other developers, when Roger mentioned that we would share half the cost, his comment was, I can do better than that. But he also made statements regarding the safety. He had suggestions regarding the safety of the neighborhood. So he's just not coming in. This is my personal take on him, and I could be off base, just to develop the property. But he's concerned about the safety concerns of the community as well. And oftentimes you hear people talk about safety, but not in the manner in which he's addressed.
I appreciate that.
If you put the manufactured homes in there, you still got to have a concrete truck to pour that foundation. You still got to put the block. But if you have 90 manufactured homes versus 40, I mean, you're still going to have the brick trucks and all that. But I'm telling you, you're not going to have no construction when it comes to even the manufactured homes. So this is a question of density.
Yeah, the main thing that I think you have to consider with the other type of density is once the construction is completed, where right now there's 400 vehicles that would be leaving that new section, there'd probably be over 800 vehicles per day. In other words, twice the traffic would be coming to that new area if you continued with the manufactured homes, the double wides in there. Now, that wouldn't affect you directly, but everybody on Polaris Drive would have twice the traffic. The biggest question that council has to address is, do you want this? If you don't want it, then it'll go back, and Joel has to decide what he wants to build there and whether it's going to be in the county or he sells it or whatever it's going to be. But again, when I said there could be about 40 homes built out there if it was in the county, that was assuming single family. If you went to a manufactured home or double wide, you're talking about at least 2 to 3 times that amount. And I'm not too sure that's, and I'll speak only for myself personally, that's not, I don't think, what we want.
Whose responsibility would it be to fix the road if it weren't in the city? He did buy a piece of property with no access from a major road.
If it was built in the county, then the county could either address that in their planning commission action. He would have no obligation to the city in fixing that road because it's outside the city limits, unless our Mr. Attorney over here could tell us differently.
So the roads that are inside the city limit, that are in Hidden Haven, he
Correct.
Would have no responsibility for.
Right.
Correct. And he'd have access to them.
And it is a public road, which does give him access to his property.
So it can be continued to any length in spite of these regulations we have about?
Well, I mean, he could build one house on the entire lot. And use the road that leads to his lot.
Sure.
And then just have a driveway, continuing to the one house on the lot.
What's the deal, though, with the length of this thing?
The length of the one-way street?
Well, the comment that the planning department made, I never got an answer to that.
A one-way street could be a maximum of 1,000 feet inside the city. If it's going to be over 1,000 feet, which that has happened on many occasions, then the Planning Commission or City Council allows that as a condition to the development. There's a lot of roads in Woodside and other areas that are over that 1,000-foot limit.
Well, the first road that was put into Fox Chase was all the way. So, I mean, the county has that same problem, too. When the first road was put in, it's way over 1,000 feet as far as the county. Mm-hmm.
I think the easiest thing we could do is forget about this and not do anything. It would save the city money. It wouldn't be the responsible thing to do, though. It wouldn't be the right thing to do. But as far as the city is concerned, it could be an easy thing for us to do, to turn it down and say, heck with it. But we're not doing that. We don't want to do that. And for all the reasons we've talked about, the right thing to do is to work together like we're trying to do. And I think we've got some good agreements going here. And to make this the best possible situation that we possibly can by working together in the safest possible situation. So that's essentially what we're trying to do here. And I think we ought to move on with this thing on first reading and take it to second reading. And this here, if the people, as you say, if you don't know of anybody that really agrees with this, if they come to the city council meeting, they can tell us that, you know.
Mr. Mayor, I don't know how I'm going to move. I'm sorry, will you?
No, go ahead. I'm finished.
I don't know how I'm going to vote in the second reading, but in essence of moving this forward for public hearing, I move that we adopt this on first ordinance to and schedule for the next second reading public hearing.
I'll second.
Okay, we got a second. Now let's make sure. Can we recap here the conditions that we're talking about in the motion? Do you want to adopt those four?
Yes.
Four conditions that Ed Evans, wherever Ed is.
Those four conditions are to improve the road, that the total of the slope on the detention pond would be 25 feet from the back property line. There'd be an untouched buffer separating Hidden Haven as you're going in to that development, and all these things would have to be recorded with the RMC. Let me just make one other comment.
What about the traffic?
Well, the traffic study would not be required because they do not meet the threshold.
Okay.
There's a buffer, untouched buffer?
An untouched buffer as you head into that area.
As you head into it, but what about on the backside?
Right now, the backside shows a 25-foot
buffer, but not untouched. It doesn't.
I would use it undisturbed.
Undisturbed. Okay. We could make that an undisturbed buffer around the property.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me just, I just pulled up what could be permitted in the RC zone, which is currently in the county. Single family dwelling units, churches, they could put a school back there, they could put in a daycare center, they could put in single family, multifamily dwellings, nursing home, child care center, they could have a livestock area with anything but pigs to be back there. Greenhouses, nurseries, equine hospital. So those are the types of things that could be back in there that are permitted without any special conditions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Plus, as we said, you know, is okay. the number of single-family homes if they want to go to single-family.
Okay. Does your motion include?
Yes.
Okay. Who's
the second? Conditions.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Mayor, just one question. Are we going to send any of this back to planning just to have them look at it, or this is just to see if this plan can be tweaked at all with for staff?
What's the purpose of sending it back?
Only that if the staff has some, as far as this green space, I mean, I looked at it, I had the same question Jane had as far as, well, is this the best place for green space? Can we, you know, is there other, and I understood Joe's comment about where it comes in, but I mean, to me, this is a perfect time for it to. Well, we can still have the staff look at it, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
If there's other ways we can tweak it.
I mean, there's nothing in the world wrong with sending it back to planning, but why should we give them more work unless there's a real reason here to do that?
It's the same plan they saw before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which they turned down six.
Right, which they turned down. Right.
Well, they did. Yes, they did. And Kay, I don't know if you, Ms. Broll is on the Planning Commission. I hesitated to put you on the spot. I don't know if there's anything you can add here, you want to add. Do you agree with what we're doing? Whatever the case may be. We appreciate the Planning Commission very much. We agree most of the time, 100% with them.
Kay Broll, Planning Commission, 48 Cherry Hills Drive. I think you've covered everything that we talked about. And in fact, if you look back here, you can see the dates that this came before us. So there's been things that have happened that Mr. Skyer has mentioned, and some of the, concerns of the citizens. were addressed, I think, in the interim, since that was before us. Now, I don't know that they're all in agreement with that. I'm like you. I don't know where they are. I think that some people feel that it has been, some of the things have been addressed, and then others are, you know, not quite sure. But
the reason why it was turned down was because of the overwhelming, road. Well, because the people complained about those items.
The roads, the safety items, you know, and at that time, since that time, Mr. Skyer has said to you all that he's willing to do these things mm-hmm. to ameliorate mm-hmm. those problems. So I, you know, I can't speak for the Planning Commission now, but right. at that time, right. those were our concerns.
Right.
Does that yes. make it any clearer? Or?
Well, it confirms, I think, what we all probably thinking, thought yeah. were the reasons. You confirmed it to us, I think, that was my thinking, that these things have occurred since the agreements and what have you.
And we were looking, you know, the same problems you were, and it was sort of, can we come up with something? But at that time, there wasn't anything. It hadn't come up yet. There was no mediation. They had mediated to that point.
Right.
So, and is that struggle between saying no or having them come in and putting restrictions on it that makes it the best development that we can get in there? Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay, where are we?
We've got a motion
and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor of first reading. Passes unanimous.
No,
I beg your pardon. 16. Sorry, Jane. Okay. Item 2, first reading of an ordinance setting the tax millage rate for the fiscal year 2005-06. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance to provide for the levy of taxes for ordinary city purposes and for capital development purposes in the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2005, setting the millage, therefore, at 71 mils and to provide for the expenditures thereof. This is the same millage that we've had since the last reassessment. I know we keep talking over and over again about the fact that this is now 17 years since we've had a change. One of the things that I was thinking about over the weekend as I was looking at various aspects, 5 years ago, actually 6 years ago, we found out from the state legislators that we were going to be losing our telecommunication money. The county did, the city did, and the school system. Well, actually, that was on the vehicle tax. But on the telecommunication, we found out that we're going to be losing that at least 80% of it. What council agreed to during those interim years was to adjust a budget to get it to the point that when the telecommunication taxes were eliminated, our budget would be adjusting year by year. And I'll call those the fat years, because during that time period, during those fat years, we took the excess money we had and we put in reserves. And if our federal government could do the same thing during the good years, save up the money so that during the lean years, which we're now in, we have excess money available to keep our millage at the same rate. In those previous years, we were taking $200,000, $300,000, maybe $400,000 at most from the reserves to balance the budget for different capital projects. Last year and this year, we're using around $700,000. Obviously, you can see the difference of about $400,000. If we continue to do that over the next 6 years, we won't have any reserves left in the special holding funds. But we have used that to help balance the budget, to keep the taxes low. I think council made some really great decisions with that. We're presenting to you tonight, keeping it at 71 mils. We'll be talking about the budget in just a moment. It'll have no fees in it or other increases, which is the first time we've had that in many, many years. So we're excited about it because we also feel like we're meeting the needs that both our citizens want and what council wants. So for your consideration tonight, this is first reading of an ordinance to set the millage rate for fiscal year 2005-2006 at 71 mils. Upon your consideration, at the second reading, public hearing will be held later this month.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion?
So moved. Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? I think it's great that our staff has worked this out for us so that we don't have to have a millage increase this year. Appreciate that very much.
What is the value of the mill increase?
I want to say off the top of my head it was about $104,000. And all I could do is relate to you 7 years ago is when I became city manager. It was at $83,000. So we've gone up probably around 24%, 25%, about 4% a year.
That's the reason
which is excellent.
Which is that 3.5% to 4% growth is very important.
That is.
The millage has stayed because the millage value of the mill has increased, and that's very important.
Certainly, yes. Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, first reading of an ordinance approving the budget for fiscal year 05 to 06. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. This is an ordinance adopting a budget proposed by the city manager containing estimates of proposed revenue and expenditures for the city of Aiken for the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2005 and ending June 30, 2006, and declaring that the same shall constitute the budget of the city of Aiken for such fiscal year. Again, as I was stating earlier, we feel that we've met all those needs. We do have a concern, and hopefully this fall it'll not be a concern. But our concern right now is in our utility division. We received, within the last 30 days, Larry sent me an email from SCE&G that they're going up 28% for our large users, which is significant for our water plant, which a large portion of the budget is electricity. So we have a 28% increase starting on May 1st. The Public Service Authority, which is Aiken County at their sewer plant, they're going up for the second year in a row at 5%. In previous years, we have looked at that and passed those rate increases on. That's going to be several hundreds of thousands of dollars in rate increases this year that we're going to try to absorb. Just 5% from the PSA, that's around $75,000 more that we'll have to be paying to them. Well, that's 2 years in a row, that's $150,000. And which we did not pass on. We did not have a rate increase last year. We're trying to absorb it and not have it this year. That's in the utility fund, and we'll have a much better idea at the end of the year. The general fund, which is the one that most everybody is concerned about, because that's the one that's the vehicle tax, the property tax, the business license, those other things. As we discussed earlier, we have a $550,000 loss in telecommunication, $450,000 this year in vehicle taxes. Next year, that vehicle tax will be $550,000, then $650,000. And again, it's hitting the county, it hits the school, it's not just us. I gave you a relationship there. Those two would be equivalent to losing 10 mills in taxes of what we were receiving 5 years ago. Theoretically, we should be going up 10 mills in taxes just to make up for the difference, and that's what a number of cities have done. Another way of looking at it would be eliminating 28 public safety officers is the equivalent of losing that money that we have lost. Instead, you know, this year we have several new services that we have added here. One is we do have some money in here to help try to obtain some federal funding for the highways, help with the DUI cases, spay-neuter program, new litter crew, the new design guidelines, which, by the way, goes to the Planning Commission tomorrow night. I promised Ed I'd come over there and try to give a little rah-rah speech to them about it as to why that's so important. The facade grant program, laptops and patrol cars, and then continuation of a number of things that we have that we always like to look at in funding other outside agencies. The bottom line is we think this and feel very strongly that it meets your expectations, hopefully, and also meets the expectation, even more importantly, of the citizens. The staff has done a tremendous job. Anita Lilly really worked side by side with me an awful lot on this. The department heads put in hundreds of hours. Their happiest day and saddest day is when they meet with me for the budget hearings, because we do have a very tight budget, and we only have in this budget a couple of new people in it for full time in the general fund. Again, if you take a look at the fact that we're having about 4% growth rate and just use a relationship, we should be adding around 10 to 12 people every year in the last, I think, 5 or 6 years, because again, the loss, we haven't even added that many. So we've had some very tight times, and hopefully now we can start working our way out of it. Next year, sometime in the latter part or the mid part of 2006, we'll start receiving the new 1 cent sales tax money, and that will certainly help. But before you tonight is the budget for fiscal year 05-06, and with your approval, this will go to second reading public hearing at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion? Second.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'll second that. Any discussion?
Does this supposes then that we have a revenue neutral business license tax, correct?
That is based on what you approved at second reading tonight.
Which is revenue neutral?
Which is contractors going up, others going down, but the same revenue coming in.
Revenue neutral. $100,000 is coming from the contractors. The other people, not generally, the other are getting a break.
So the rates are going down, but yes, it's the revenue neutral based on what we have coming in today.
I would like to comment, Mr. Mayor, that I had some concerns about other rates going up, other user fees going up to meet the needs of the budget, and I'm just so thrilled that that's not happening this year, because we have had that in years past. Mm-hmm. And there's none of that this year. No $1.53 or $2.37 on senior citizens, and I'm really thrilled about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the first time, Beverly, in the 6 years I've been city manager, that we have not had to go up.
I think that's one of the pluses in this budget.
Right. Absolutely. Anything else? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Opposed? Or is that unanimous yes? Or?
No.
Okay. It's 6-6-1.
I'm not for revenue neutral business license.
It passes 6-1. Okay. We added an item, number four, which I wrote down, consider a resolution to establish a joint study committee for a connector from Whiskey Road to Powderhouse Road. Is that close?
That's not even close. That's exactly correct.
Oh, okay. Good.
We discussed at the work session earlier tonight that the county has handed us a resolution asking that we would consider having a 3-3-3 committee, three county council members, three city council members, and three citizens at large, which would be selected by those six council members at the first meeting, hopefully being made up of individuals that live right in that area or own land. I know we're working with the landowners where this road would cross, and it's been a good working relationship. But tonight we would have to approve that and then approve who the three council members would be from the city so we can move forward with this as quickly as possible.
Okay, very good. Who did we have that volunteered? Pat?
I would do it if it's in my area. I go by it all the time. So
we need three.
Dick Smith, Pat Cunning, and Beverly Klein.
I was either going to go with Don, but I'll take it.
Pat, Beverly, and Dick. Is that okay with everybody?
Don is all right with you.
Okay. Do we have a motion then to approve? A motion and second to approve?
So moved, sir.
Motion? Have a second?
Second.
Any discussion on it? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, good. Now, got to work with the county to get the three at-large citizens.
Yes, and I'll talk to Clay Killian tomorrow about that, and I'll be seeing him at a meeting first thing in the morning and let him know what we have done.
Okay. One more item.
The last item we have here,
request for approval of transfer of property in Marines Industrial Park.
Yes, is an item that we're not absolutely sure the council has to approve, but we felt safer to have council approve it than not. And that's one of the properties out in the industrial park on Wyndham Boulevard, the very end of the street on the left-hand side. It used to be called the Dykes Building. Has been used as a manufacturing location with Shinsho. They take wire and make it into spark plugs and do a number of other things. They are the ones that bought the property just to the south, near to the airport from us, and built a new industrial site that opened up about a year ago, about 9 months ago. So we were at that grand opening there. they are occupying both buildings, but the person who they're leasing from is transferring that property and selling it to another party. Jim Holly is here tonight representing those other folks, and he would like to have council consider the approval of a resolution to allow the transfer of property from the American Industrial Capital to TRR Dorchester LLC.
Okay. Jim, is there anything else you want to tell us about that?
No, sir.
Excuse me.
There's no change other than ownership of the property. There's still a lease in place.
Okay.
We have a resolution.
Okay, we have a motion. A second?
Second.
All right. Any discussion?
Yeah, it's already seconded. Oh, sorry.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously.
Can I make one last announcement?
Yes.
Okay, I'd like to make one last announcement. I believe most of you have told Sarah that of your intentions of going to the Municipal Association meeting. We're going to be making those reservations this week, so if you have any changes, please let her know. You did get in your package of material, information, talking about a couple of items that will be happening there on Thursday, and some of you have gone early on Thursday to attend some of these. They do have two sessions, three sessions to the regular conference. One's called Communicating the Value and Vision of Cities. And the other one that I really like, at least the title, but also what it talks about, is called Beware of the Good Times. During good times, a lot of cities and communities start spending money, and then when the bad times come, it's hard to stop spending that money. We've been very good about that, but it's not a practice that every city has followed. But if you're interested in either of those, that you need to change your reservation, again, please let Sarah know so that we can make those reservations Wednesday. So Wednesday morning, first thing, we'll be making reservations. That's all I have, sir.
Okay. Colleen?
Mr. Mayor, members of City Council, I would just like to thank you all very much for recognizing the volunteers in the City of Aiken at the luncheon last week. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate everything they do. Okay, we stand adjourned.